It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. I have a really fun panel this week. Lisa Schmeiser is here from IT Pro Today. Lindsay Turrentine, super smart, from CNET. And, of course, our own Lori Gill from MacBreak Weekly and iMore.com. And do we have a lot to talk about? The tech titans testifying once again in Congress. What does it mean? A fork in the road for PC architectures. And we're going to be streaming not just movies, but games, and soon even Windows. Plus, a PC that boots up from a vinyl disc. It's all coming up next on Twit. This Week in Tech comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees LastPass? Can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether employees are working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit. This Week in Tech, episode 798, recorded Sunday, November 22nd, 2020. The Lighthouse Keeper and His Robot Butler. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by TIBCO. TIBCO's connected intelligence platform simplifies the way you capture data, connect applications, and turn decisions into actions. Learn more about how TIBCO can unlock the value of your company's real-time data at TIBCO.com/podcast. And by LastPass. Give your IT and security leaders control of password security with the award-winning LastPass. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. And by CashFly. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with CashFly's CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. And by IT Pro TV. Get professional IT training with the experts. Visit itpro.tv/twit for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription. Use the code TWIT30 at checkout. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the week's tech news. And this is the liquid consonant edition. I just realized everybody on this show's name begins with L. I'm Leo. That's Lindsay. Lindsay Turrentine, Senior Vice President, Content and Audience at CNET. Holy cow. This is not a different job for you, just the title keeps shifting.
The title changed a teeny bit. It's basically the same job with the same awesome team.
Nice. Now a Red Venture publication, but that's good, right?
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it's going to be good for you.
It's a good thing.
Good. Yeah. So nice to see you.
It's great to be here.
Lisa Schmeiser is also here, another liquid consonant, editor at IT Pro Today. Good to see you, Lisa.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. No cookies today? No Girl Scout cookies?
Not until Q1 2021.
Oh, I want my Samoas.
Have me on anytime after Martin Luther King Day, and I can probably connect you.
I didn't realize that. For some reason, I thought it was now. Yeah. But it wouldn't make sense because everybody's making, you know, holiday cookies. You got to save it for when we're really desperate for sweets. And also from MacBreak Weekly, we've been seeing a lot of her lately. I'm thrilled. Lori Gill, managing editor at iMore.com.
How's it going?
Hi, Lori.
You woke me up on a Sunday to join the show. It's
no,
so great.
You wouldn't be still sleeping at 2:45 in the afternoon.
Well, Come on. I'm a party girl.
Maybe in the days when you were singing in the punk clubs, but I doubt. In fact, there was a curfew. We're under curfew now.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
We got to go to bed by 10.
Yeah. Nobody's allowed to be out after 10.
Can you believe that? Wow.
I think
it is
great.
a little bit weird.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's a Band-Aid solution, but if anything to try to remind people that we need to stop being in each other's presence, you know, anything that we can do to help.
I'm curious about what the motivation is. Is it just to keep people from having parties? Is that basically
I think it has to be bars. Nightclubs, bars, restaurants, big groups.
And even
but the even biggest in events your, that have spread things have been private parties.
I think they're trying to keep people from having parties at their house because that's where the spread is happening.
See, I question how effective a curfew will be because if you've got a gated community where everybody is operating under the premise that what other people don't know doesn't hurt them, you know, you could have parties going on that nobody cracks down on, for example.
Yeah. Well, so, the police, they've also said that the police are not going to really enforce this as much as they're going to be sort of like requesting and advising. So nobody's going to get fined for doing it. But, you know, we're kind of in this weird situation where, we're having to do things to try to mitigate the spread of COVID-19, but also trying to make people feel like they can continue their daily life. And it's a real struggle because you can't go back from telling people that they can now, you know, go out to restaurants. It's really difficult to go back from that because they're tired of it. They're tired of the situation. They want to be able to go to the bars and go out to restaurants, and they don't like being told that they can't, even though they would have in March or April, now that they were allowed to, and now having that taken back from them, it's kind of just part of our emotional state. People just don't want to do it anymore. The same exact thing happened during the Spanish flu. They had mask mandates, and then they took away the mask mandates, and then they put the mandates back in, and everybody went wild because they didn't want to have to wear masks anymore. We're just going through the same thing again.
Isn't that funny? 100 years later, we're going through exactly. The playbook hasn't changed. Well, there's one thing that's different. In 1918, they didn't have TikTok houses. They didn't have to worry about a bunch of 20-somethings getting together having massive parties. I honestly think this curfew is the TikTok curfew, to be honest.
Yeah.
You sure they didn't have like ether parlors where people got together?
I'm going down to the ether parlor, man. Yeah. Don't bug me. I gotta.
Yeah, nobody is angrier about parties, I have found, actually, than teenagers because they so desperately want to go back to high school.
Yes.
When they hear about 20-somethings having parties, they get pissed because they're like, you're ruining it for me.
Knock it off.
Yeah.
Well, that's because you have good teenagers. I don't think all teenagers feel that way.
You're ruining it for all of us.
I think there are plenty of teenagers who just go, please, I have to live my life. We have a senior. Michael's 18. So his 18th, poor kid, this is the worst year ever. His 18th birthday is Thursday. It's on Thanksgiving. We were going to have a lot of family in town. We were going to have everybody over for a big Thanksgiving dinner / 18th birthday party. And we had to say, and you know what he said last night, which is great. He says, that's okay. We'll have it on my 19th.
Sweet guy.
I know.
Yeah. That is great. We have a senior also, and it is just such a bummer.
They're not going to, maybe they'll get to walk. There's a thin chance that maybe the vaccine will come out and enough people will get it that by May, God, it would be nice if they could just.
I don't know. I think that honestly, I mean, in my house, they don't care about walking. They care about missing the year. Like, this is the year they're all going to be big men on campus and pull their senior pranks. And they feel, you know, it's just sad.
When you got, you know, you can't tape anybody to the flagpole when you're not via Zoom.
Exactly.
It just doesn't work.
These pranks were planned out.
The TikTok house apparently is such a big deal that there is a company in L.A. that does TikTok house rental. That was just acquired. I'm trying to find the story because I can't. I didn't bookmark it because I didn't think it was consequential. But it kind of blew my mind. They were just acquired by another big company because there's so much money in TikTok house rentals. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
That's crazy.
I know.
This world is so weird.
We live in a
timeline. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really wonder what's going to happen on Thanksgiving. There is some evidence that already the TSA is reporting yesterday, 1 million people went through the checkpoints. It's the first time 1 million people have been at the airport since May. That the people are traveling, and this is not even quite Thanksgiving yet. People are traveling. In fact, I think I saw a stat that said 38% of people plan to have a Thanksgiving travel to a Thanksgiving with 10 or more people. Which is exactly what the CDC is saying. Do not do. So I don't know what Christmas is going to be like, but I'm afraid.
A lot of small funerals.
That's what they say. That's a nightmare.
So sad.
All right, let's get off that subject. Let's get back to TikTok. TikTok was complaining last week.
Addictive.
They were saying, what happened? You were going to shut us down and we haven't heard from you. That was a mistake. So it's like when I'm at the, when I'm working with a trainer, I say, boy, that was easy. Never, ever.
Yeah.
Don't poke the lion. Yeah. So immediately the commerce department says, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Forgot about you. So the acquis, I don't know what's going on. Walmart and Oracle were going to buy them. I'm even just saying that just makes me laugh. TikTok was saying, is that going to happen? I don't even know.
I feel like they were doing that for a, to do a favor.
There seemed to be some political tits for chat.
I would place money on it not happening.
You think nothing's going to happen. Yeah, it felt like it was at the time a political thing. The president has moved on.
So the National Security Advisor, Robert O'Brien, just gave a speech in Vietnam where he was saying, look, these court cases are ongoing. The federal government is going to wait for direction from the courts to tell us what we can and can't do.
Right, because Judge Beadlestone suspended that initial shutdown, which was supposed to happen Friday. Yeah. So I don't know.
It honestly seems like this was more of a saber rattling, ham-handed attempt to remind China that they can affect its commerce with the U.S. than it is a serious matter of policy or any sort of tech acquisition. I mean, you're looking at a lame duck administration that says, oh, we're going to do this once the courts let us. But feasibly speaking, is this going to happen before January 20th?
They almost feel like they're thinking, and with any luck, we won't have to worry about it in a couple of months. Like,
because
they painted themselves into a weird corner.
Yeah.
One of the lawsuit that Judge Beadlestone ruled on was from three TikTok influencers who make their living on TikTok, who said, Your Honor, if the Commerce Department cuts off TikTok servers, which was supposed to happen on Friday, that's going to cost us millions of dollars in revenue. And the judge said, yes, it's unfair. Mm-hmm. To TikTok influencers. Mm-hmm. I just like saying Judge Beadlestone. That's really the only reason I brought that up.
I thought you were going to say you just like saying TikTok influencers, because that's a funny one too.
Yeah, one too. What, we live in an interesting times, interesting world. That's all there is. Did any of you watch? I didn't even bother. Zuckerberg and Dorsey testifying once again in front of Congress this week. Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing. So I'm married to another tech reporter at Tom's Guide, and he put up a screen grab of Jack Dorsey and Zuckerberg next to each other side by side. And he tweeted, this looks like a show about a stranded lighthouse keeper and the robot butler he built to keep him company.
Let me guess which is which. The one with the beard is the lighthouse keeper, right?
Yes. The thing is, it went massively viral.
Oh, now I gotta find this.
I'm gonna look for the tweet now and see if I can drop it into our Slack discussion, because this thing went massively viral, and I had people I haven't talked to
here
in years all my timeline. All yeah,
here it is. It. Yeah, yeah, I got it. Lighthouse keeper and robot butler, Zuckerberg. And is it Mike? Was it Mike's tweet?
No,
somebody else took it.
Someone else.
It really does look like he looks like Data. He really does.
I'm dropping in the link for you for Skype now.
Oh, so I can't do it from Skype. I don't have access to that. Which ones? Look at all of these. Which ones? Even Kenji Lopez got in there. Which one is your husband of all of these?
Look, Michael's. Jack Dorsey, look, they're offering membership. Yeah, Philip Michaels is the first one. Yeah. The Senate hearing looks like the tale of a maroon lighthouse keeper and the robot butler he built to stave off loneliness. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It really does.
Yeah.
I think there's a movie there.
But
that's creepy as hell.
I think the question I have about all of these hearings is, how useful are they if you are talking to a bunch of legislators who still aren't quite up to date on the scope and the breadth of what these social networks do?
So these were blatantly political the last time. Was it again this time pretty much? I mean, and why even bother? The election's over. What do they hope to gain at this point?
Well, this is still an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's important. I'm glad that we're talking about it. The timing is probably not very useful because it's because of the lame duck session.
It's a lame duck,
But it's an important conversation. And I think that legislatures are starting to learn more about it. We've seen some really smart questions and takedowns and some really stupid ones too. But it kind of depends on the legislator. And if they've learned anything in this election cycle, it's that the internet matters.
Yeah. The other point somebody made is, where's Susan Wojcicki on this? Isn't YouTube at least as culpable as Facebook and Twitter at spreading election disinformation?
Well, it's hard to measure culpability, but it's so important. I mean, the algorithmic rabbit holes that people go down and never come out of are so damaging.
So I was at an event, I may have been RSA or it was another one where a senior leadership team from YouTube was speaking, and they were supposed to be addressing the topic of, here's how diversity helped us deal with concerns that were coming up with our YouTube for Kids product. And I thought, oh, this ought to be good, since how YouTube aims its offerings at children and again pulls those kids into rabbit holes where they're just clicking. And what was interesting is when the YouTube executives began speaking, they said, well, we were identifying a real problem with our YouTube Kids product. And I thought, oh, this is great. We're going to start talking about, oh, there were videos that were inserting upsetting content, or they weren't factual, or they were marketing pitches. And they're like, and they said, the problem is the kids weren't spending enough time on the app. And it wasn't sticky enough.
So
we started looking at how they were using it so we could boost engagement. And
we're just not addictive enough. That's the problem.
I need to know about YouTube's priorities. They're And the argument I'm sure they'll make is, we're not a publisher. We don't have to be responsible for the content on our platform. But
yet,
I think you do have an executive team at YouTube where engagement is their top concern over anything else.
Well, I think you can say the same thing on Facebook. I don't know about Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Twitter's priorities are more free speech than engagement, I think. but literally, YouTube and Facebook's entire algorithmic system is designed to increase engagement and stickiness, to get you to spend more time there, right?
We were just in the house talking about this morning, that one of the interesting side effects of that is that, so we know that fear and anger create engaging content, and people do engage, which is why so many young men get radicalized on YouTube. And it's upsetting. But one of the things that it leaves is really bad marketing. So as we kind of go through time, I think when you start to think about Facebook as a product, your emotional reaction to that product is generally negative now, because when you log in, you see negative stuff. And I think over time, it's going to kill these brands. Maybe not YouTube, but Facebook. It's really bad for them.
Yeah.
Well, people leave because it's unpleasant.
And I don't think anybody at either Facebook or Twitter or YouTube is saying, oh, yes, look for the stuff that makes you angriest, or look for the stuff that makes you more upset. They're simply saying it's easy. It's a simple thing. What content generates the most engagement? What do people stay watching the longest? What gets them to click more? What keeps them on the site longer? That's all you have to do. And it's the nature of humanity, Lindsay, that that means you're going to get the angry, crazy, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And this is what happened to local news, right? You know, it was local television news. Film at 11, it was all about engagement, and it ended up going the lowest common denominator. It's what happened to TV.
There's that Don Henley song, Dirty Laundry. Now, I was recently rereading Neal Stephenson's book, Fall or Dodge in Hell.
I love that book.
But there's the entire section in the middle where one of the characters, Sophia, as a college student, is going through part of the country she's not used to being in and negotiating with subcultures she's not used to. And what I thought was really interesting in that book was Stevenson uses Facebooked as an adjective to describe a type of online or even face-to-face discourse that is all about getting that engagement rush as opposed to a substantive exchange of ideas. And one of the geniuses of good sci-fi writers is they're really good at kind of anticipating where you're going to be 5, 10, 15 years down the road. And the fact that he was already pegging social media as this, what is the opposite of a value add? Whatever the opposite of a value add.
A value subtract.
Yeah, a value subtract, I guess. Yeah. But he was talking about like that. And I couldn't help but think about that with, a lot of what we're looking at now in terms of how, what role did social media play?
Fall also has, I love the book. It's a little hard. It's not, maybe not a great novel, but the, as usual with Neil, the ideas are really provocative. One of the other things people in Fall do is they wear a mask, which is initially intended to defeat face recognition because it's so ubiquitous. But ultimately what ends up happening is you can project, you own different persona, all signed with the crypto key and all that. And you can project the persona, the person you want to be at the moment you're being it, whether it's hanging out with your friends or at a store, that you completely control the person that is in public. And I thought that was a really interesting idea that's going to happen.
It is happening in a minor way. L'Oreal just released an app. L'Oreal,
yes,
the makeup company. Mm-hmm. Now you can actually pay a small amount to look, to have an AI face done for your call. I almost did it for today just to try it, but then I didn't get around to it. But basically have L'Oreal do my makeup via machine.
It's L'Oreal, which is a makeup company, but it's virtual makeup. It's stuff that you would use in your Zoom call or your Twitter appearance to, but this is like Snapchat filters. What's the only, the thing that's interesting about it is coming from a traditional brick and mortar makeup company, right?
Yeah. And you can use it for class. You know, you can imagine high school kids using this in class. Yeah. And you just don't have to put anything on. You just turn on your machine. It works pretty well. I tried it on my phone.
Does it?
Yeah.
Well, and of course, increasingly we're getting phones with LiDAR built in,
right?
Thanks to Apple, that will be even better at superimposing stuff on your face. Yeah. It's just for women, though. What about us guys? Is there a L'Oreal men?
You can use it too. There are women in the picture, but there's no reason you can't have yellow eyelashes, Leah.
I think that's fascinating. That's a fascinating point, though. The marketing versus who might want to use it.
Yeah, plenty of guys. So. Yeah. What's also interesting is they've made it, of course, it's a Snapchat filter, but they've made it not only for Snapchat, but it's Google Duo, for Instagram, for Snap Camera, which is Snapchat's, Zoom plugin. You can get volumizing capsules. You can get plump shot. What is that plump?
I think it's basically, it fills out, it's like getting Botox or fillers. It fills out your lips with.
And it works like, it really looks like you have fillers.
The makeup like kind of fleshes out your lips.
You know, movie stars have had this for years.
It's democratizing.
It's just democratizing it. This was the dirty little secret of motion picture making for at least the last 10 years was it's often in the contract, the movie star's contract. You will make these modifications to the movie star before you publish the film. And there's plenty of tools that will do this frame by frame, but now, and everybody could do it. And more importantly, you could do it in real time. So you don't have to,
when I was trying it, my description of it is that it smooths out your face so aggressively that it's almost upsetting.
It's the, like, well, remember, Google stopped using the term beauty filter because they thought that was pigeonholing. This is beauty is, a lineless face. Mm-hmm. So they now just, I don't know, they have another word for it that isn't judgmental.
Smoothing?
Yeah, something like that. But but that is kind of, I mean.
That's it's not no way ageist.
Yeah. You thinning. Just in time for Fleets, which is not an enema. Well, actually, it is an enema, but it's also Twitter's disappearing tweets, which look exactly like Snapchat's disappearing tweets, which look exactly like Instagram's disappearing movies. It's pretty much they didn't even bother to make it look different. It's still it's a circle at the top of the Twitter thing. Yep. Mm-hmm. But what do you think of the name? Is that a good name? Lisa, I hear a big sigh coming from Lisa Schmeiser.
I can see the logic where I can just imagine the meeting where someone said fleet because it rhymes with tweet. So we're maintaining our brand identity here.
And it's fleeting.
And it's fleeting. Yeah. No, somebody really loves this name. I have a feeling someone in that organization is super excited about it. And I'm sighing because I could imagine it so easily. And I hate that I could.
I also hate the tweet that announced it. Thing you didn't tweet, but wanted to, but didn't, but got so close, but then you were like, nah, we have a place for that now. Fleets rolling out
there. Doesn't this go back to the whole lack of, doesn't this go back to the whole emotional engagement and getting that dopamine hit?
I don't think we should encourage people emotion. To yeah. tweet something they decided not to tweet.
Yeah.
In the first place. That's not what the world needs.
Like, why don't you have a pause button instead where you're
it's
like,
the other direction.
Do you really want to tweet that?
Yes. Why don't we think harder before
like
you tweet
the Apple
that.
Breathing, the Apple Watch breathing exercise for a minute. And then if you're still sure at the end of it, then we will let you tweet it.
I have a completely opposite opinion on this one.
You love fleets.
I haven't made a single one yet. But my experience, I think, with rolling out new features, social media is in general, Twitter especially, has tested the daylights out of anything that they roll out. And they're pretty certain it's going to be successful and that people
really
want it. And then also people who are really engaged in Twitter love to complain about changes, but it'll catch on. And I promise, like, you mark my words, in a year, if somebody takes away fleets, people will be really, really upset. And I also think that if you're not into Instagram and you're into Twitter for different reasons, it gives you a chance to do some things that you wouldn't do on Instagram because Instagram isn't a news platform. Mm. So it gives you a chance to use a different format for that kind of commentary. And let's say you don't want something to stay in your timeline forever. There are people, you know, who delete their timelines every week because they just don't want a record of it. Oh, yeah.
I wish.
There are a lot of people who just every week go back and delete all their tweets because they just don't want it on the record.
That's actually.
So now there's another way to do it.
And I can't take credit for this insight, but I wish I could remember who said it. But really, the problem, if you want to pinpoint the problem with Twitter, is that it's ephemera. It is something that just hot take off the top of your head that really shouldn't last. So it's water cooler talk that lasts forever. That's written on like stone. And honestly, that's where most people get into trouble. It's the thing they said 4 years ago in jest that now out of context is horrific. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or just sort of like, you know, your fleeting thoughts, just like you're saying, like in some part, Twitter does you do want to get those likes and those clicks and those engagement reactions, but sometimes you just want to say something to the world. You just want to yell it into the void. But Twitter is not that void. But you do it anyway. And then later you go, oh, yeah, I forgot I did that. I'm going to take that down now. And even like we've heard of some people who have like their entire careers were destroyed because of some sort of flippant thing that they weren't thinking. They didn't think about before they tweeted it. And, you know, 24 hours later, it's still there. It's still horrible. Or maybe they took it down and put an apology there. But it's like, if you have the option for it to just disappear after 24 hours, maybe people will forget that you said that really stupid thing that you didn't mean to say, you know, like there's,
or never noticed in the first place.
Or maybe never noticed in the first place. Yeah. Yeah.
For that, there is this. Looks like you need Iceland.com. Are you familiar with this site?
That.
So this is an actual field in the middle of nowhere in Iceland with a giant speaker set up.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to tap to scream.
Please scream responsibly. The world is listening.
And now I'm going to. Now I'm going to send my scream to Skokarvas, South. Uh-huh. Finland, this is the screen name that's going to appear, and I'm calling from Petaluma in the United States of America. Apparently, from all over the world, people are screaming.
So, I'm a little surprised they don't have the countries ranked by the frequency of who's screaming.
And then I can even have them email me with a video of my scream.
So it's playing out of that yellow
out
box.
Of this yellow speaker in Iceland.
Yeah.
I just screamed in Iceland, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I would love to know, like, a breakdown. Who's screaming the most?
Yeah.
Like, is there a time of day
like
where
the sheep don't mind?
And does Bjork have access to all of those screams for a future project?
I bet you this is from Bjork. What do you think? They moved the speaker around, apparently, so that one neighborhood should have to suffer for too long. This started with COVID, and I think it was Iceland's response to quarantine.
To let it out.
Let it out.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what Twitter should have done. But instead, it's preserved these screams that should have been sent to Iceland never to be heard again are actually preserved forever on Twitter. So to get back to this congressional testimony, this isn't about Section 230. This wasn't about anything but I don't understand why they still, even after the election, want a grandstand.
Fundraising is a 24/7 thing, man.
Oh. Yeah, exactly. Like because the elections are over doesn't mean they don't want to, you know, keep their job. Can get somewhere bigger next year or 4 years from now or something like that. Yeah. But this is definitely something that's important for us to be. This discussion does need to be had. I think what I've learned in the past year is that if you think about, you know, maybe a year ago or earlier this year, what these hearings were like, it was really like an eye rolling peacock fest that just made you want to throw things at your television set or your computer. And they've gotten
Iceland,
better
as the case.
You want to scream it screamed Iceland. Yeah, they've gotten better. They're starting to realize that they actually have to ask important questions. And it's not just a place to say, you know, will you promise to do X, Y, and Z? Because that's my platform. They don't do that as much. They really are coming to the table now with like, OK, here's what our constituents are actually worried about. Here's what we've been researching. And there are people who are kind of behind the scenes telling them things like, this is what's going on. This is what the issue is. This is what we need to work on. And they're starting to bring that to the table now. And I think that we will see some real discussions being had about this sort of thing in the near future, maybe within the next year.
So I guess the question is, and maybe it was Ted Cruz who crystallized this. He asked, Jack Dorsey about Twitter's decision to add labels to the president's tweets about voter fraud. Cruz said, "You're a publisher when you're doing that." He barked. "You're entitled to take a policy position, but you don't get to pretend you're not a publisher and therefore get special benefit under Section 230. That doesn't seem unfair. Just for those who are not following this, it's something we've been talking about for months. Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act says, in effect, that just because you're publishing on the internet, a comment section, a chat room, Twitter, Facebook, doesn't mean you're a publisher. And in fact, you're protected if you decide to delete content or not delete content. You can't be sued for what a third party posts on your site. Now, clearly, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter are publishers, too, of content that they create. But that most of the content on those sites are not created by them, so they're not liable for that. That many people consider is a foundational law that made the internet possible. Mm-hmm. I know I wouldn't be able to have an IRC chat room if I could be sued for what people say in there. I wouldn't have comments on a forum or on a YouTube post if I were be liable for what they say. So that protects me, and it has been a very important thing for the development of the internet. But it is true that if you start acting like a publisher, you shouldn't have a safe harbor, right?
And Leo, there's also something to consider, which is that just like you're saying, you wouldn't have a forum if you weren't protected. But there are lots of people who are harassed and, you know, like have all kinds of horrible things said to them, said about them. And these non-publishers like Twitter and Facebook and stuff, they just shrug and say, "We didn't do it, so we're not going to really make a big deal about it."
I think they get really nervous about policing it. And this is a problem with 230, and I don't know what the solution is, but they get really nervous about policing it because I think that they are concerned that once they start to police in a detailed way, they are then liable to police everything, which they can't figure out how to do.
No, 230 specifically says, though, you can do that, and it doesn't
you can
make
delete.
You a publisher. You can. So, and even if you act as a publisher in some aspects, that doesn't mean you're suddenly liable for content that third parties put on your site. I have a blog. I'm liable for the blog content, but I'm not liable under Section 230 for the comments on that blog. That and that's one thing Ted Cruz is a little confused about. But and there's very specifically a safe harbor so that you – this is the other thing that these guys, I think, don't understand. If you eliminate 230, that eliminates moderation because it's 230 that's protecting you when you moderate. Yes? You don't – Lindsay, you think that any moderation –
I'm trying to go back to my very, very early days on the internet, and I'm talking about like – the year 2000 and how much time we spent kind of worrying about the degree to which we, meaning publishers, got involved at all. Because the concern was if you start to get involved, then you are acting as a publisher. And deleting is one thing. And I think that we have evolved, the internet has evolved, and all of the understanding of laws, and this one in particular, has evolved to allow us to do more deleting to protect people. But there is still, but it could be argued, the opposite could be argued, which is that once you start to make decisions and really detailed decisions about what is fair game, you're then responsible for all decisions and you're acting as a publisher because you are editing. Yeah. And so I think that the social media sites have had to try to navigate this and they do it wrong a lot. But I think that 230 itself probably needs to evolve to give more flexibility to allow that safe harbor without publishers having to worry about going a step too far and then becoming responsible for what people are saying on that platform. It's just a tough, tough question because it's true. I think it's fair to say that, you know, Twitter is in many ways playing a communications role that's more similar to the phone company than
a common carrier instead of a publisher.
But it is not the same as a phone company because the record is permanent and it's not one-to-one. So it is a difficult one.
Yeah. To get into more of the internet old school thing, I actually remember in 1995, people were debating whether or not ISPs were considered publishers because they would allow people to put up bonkers websites. Actually, in 1995, I did a news story on Stormfront because they had rolled out their website and they had forums and were beginning to recruit. And the question was, the ISP that lets Stormfront run its operation, are they responsible as a publisher? And ultimately, they concluded no. The whole point to a common carrier is it provides a service to anyone who can pay the fee. And there are terms and conditions for the service, but you can't just go in willy-nilly. It has to be something that's provably detrimental to the service.
Well, that's
what
interesting,
I wonder is if social media is going to get to the point where they're going to argue that they're more like an ISP in that they're equal, they offer equal access. And as such, it's just whoever can pay to play gets to. You know, it's because it seems these are all companies that are, you know, fundamentally selling data. What they generate on the end, the harassment campaigns or the incorrect tweets or the Facebook groups that are used to organize, like that's the user experience. But from a business model, every single one of these companies is in the business of harvesting data and then selling slice and dice data products to somebody else.
So
they're going to do whatever
There are two things here. There's the law, which is very clear. In fact, that one of the things I'm so hesitant to modify 230 because it is so almost perfect in its very simplistic, clear description. It's almost like a constitutional amendment. It's very simple. There's also, though, public pressure. If you are publishing Stormfront, you may not be violating the law, but you may also be subject to intense public pressure, and this is not to obviate the need for a society to, you know, in other ways say, hey, we don't like that, you shouldn't do it. But what they're saying is government should not get involved in this. It's important to remember that the reason 230 exists was a lawsuit against Prodigy. That's how long ago this was. Prodigy, in an effort to provide, and I'm reading from Mike Masnick's excellent post on techdirt.com. In order to provide a family-friendly environment, Prodigy did some moderation of its message boards. And in the lawsuit Stratton Oakmont versus Prodigy, the judge ruled that since Prodigy did moderate the boards, it would be liable for anything it left up. At the time, the state of the law was such that that was the case. So Section 230 was written to explicitly overrule that judicial decision so that sites like Prodigy would not have liability if they moderated. It would give them the right to moderate without suddenly becoming a publisher. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really important. Without that, I don't know if you have the internet. You know, there are a lot of lawsuits that were just preemptorily stopped because Section 230. Nope, you cannot sue Twitter for something Lisa's husband posts on there. You know, right? Mark Zuckerberg can't come up come after Twitter for that. And that's right. That's the way it should be. Yeah. He does look like Data. There's nothing Mark Zuckerberg can do about it. So I think we got to be careful about modifying it. I really makes me nervous because it is pretty close to, I feel pretty close to perfect. But that's, I'm just arguing against you a little bit, Lindsay, on that.
Oh, that's totally fair. I'm not even sure you're arguing against me. I'm kind of exploring in my own mind how do we fix the problem, which is rampant spread of misinformation and sometimes intentionally.
Exactly.
And we're not there yet. I think that business interests are, in this case, counter to public interests.
Yes.
And I just hope that conversation keeps going.
Yeah. Well, there's no question in my mind.
You said what I was kind of groping at, which is that there's no incentive for businesses to address this unless they're going to lose money. And to loop back to earlier comments, once Facebook loses brand equity, they're going to get very, very interested in addressing the public good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no question in my mind that these guys have immense power. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if they should be regulated or broken up, or I don't think those are good solutions either. That's to me, this is the biggest problem. And I'm gonna include Google in this, Facebook, Amazon. I'm gonna throw in here. They have, you know, Twitter less so, to be honest. It's only a few hundred million people. It's not that big a deal. And YouTube, these guys have immense power. And I think you could make the case that if Mark Zuckerberg decided he wanted candidate A to be the next president, he'd have a lot of ability to sway the country. Don't you think? Mm-hmm. He could do it. Mm-hmm. Do we want some one person to have that ability? And yet, what is the governmental remedy for that? I don't know.
Yeah, this is a tough one. It's just, it's really hard stuff. And we haven't quite figured it out yet.
And that's why I scream in Iceland. That's all there is to it. That's the reason. All right, let's take a little bit break. This is the L Word show. Lisa, Leo, Lindsay, and Laurie. I don't mean anything by that. I'm just saying. Oh, brand new sponsor. I want to welcome Tibco to the show. I have to say, I had an education. I was spending some time with Tibco talking to them about what they do. And I was saying, well, what what is it you do? And I think it's really important to understand how important a company like Tibco is in the modern world. If you're I can do this by giving you some examples. If you're a company, nowadays everything's instrumented. You know, you've got lots of information flooding in from your factories, from your stores, from your customers, tons of information all the time. That I think if you're an executive, you look at it and you say, I know if I could just somehow massage that information, connect that information, I could gain insights from it that would change how we do business. That's what Tibco does. There are three pillars to Tibco. They let you capture data, connect to that data, unify it, and then predict based on that data. Take an example, Panera. You know Panera. Everybody knows Panera. So Panera's got a problem. It's called COVID-19. All of a sudden, these stores that were vibrant, thriving, people coming and going, nobody's coming in anymore. Nobody can come in anymore. So Panera needed to know, what do we do to change our business? They had the data. They used Tibco to unify the data, to analyze it, and they were able to figure out, oh, I know what we do. We create Panera Bread Grocery, and they knew exactly what menu items, what products to cook, and what they could sell. They were able to diversify their business during quarantine because they had a solid, flexible master data management foundation from TIBCO. It supported quick updates, new product additions. You know the name TIBCO, I'm betting. You've probably seen it on their Mercedes-AMG Petronas F1 team, right? 7 world championships. That's another good example of a huge amount of data. An F1, Formula One race car, is instrumented to the ninth level. I mean, every single thing on that car is sending out megabytes of information every second. Tons of information. How do you use that information to tell you how to drive the car, how to tune the car, how to handle the next race? With TIBCO's deep technical expertise in connecting disparate systems, unifying the data, and then predicting outcomes with advanced analytics, they won 7 world championships. For the University of Iowa's, their hospital and clinics, they were able to use the data gathered from surgeries from patients, and they were able to reduce their surgical site infections by 74%. That's what analytics can do for you. That's what TIBCO can do for you. They solve tomorrow's impossible business problems by seamlessly connecting any application device or data source. That's the first pillar. Intelligently unifying that data so you have better access, trust, and control of it. That's the second pillar. And then confidently predicting business outcomes with real-time data-driven intelligence. This is business intelligence to the nth degree. This is the next level. TIBCO gives businesses the things they need, the information they need to succeed. Data is, there's no question about it, the transformative energy of the modern enterprise. And TIBCO is there to help its customers unlock the value of their real-time data to create a competitive asset. Think there's nothing more real-time than the data coming into an F1 race car. Constant flow of data, real time. TIBCO can set it up so that you can analyze that and use it and get those insights. Fuel the modern enterprise through TIBCO's connected intelligence. You want to know more about TIBCO and how they unlock the value of your company's real time data? TIBCO, TIBCO.com/podcast. That's TIBCO.com/podcast. Really interesting company. I spent almost an hour talking to them about all the different things they are capable of doing, and I was blown away. 14 leadership positions from top industry analysts, including Gartner. They are the kings of this. They are huge in the digital economy. You need them. TIBCO, TIBCO.com/podcast. And we thank them so much for supporting This Week in Tech. Sometimes I wish I had TIBCO to help me understand what's going on in this world around us. It is a wild ride. All right, we're done with Congress. If only.
I'm done with Congress.
If only. moving on to other shores. Let me see. There's so many things we could talk about today. It's really nice to have the three of you here. And I don't want anybody to think that we said, "Oh, let's get all women on." But it happened, and you know what? I think it's working out pretty well. Lori Gill from MacBreak Weekly, and of course, iMore.com. Lisa Schmeisner from the IT Pro Today team. She's editor there. L. Schmeiser on the Twitter, and Lindsay Turrentine. Big shot, SVP in content and audience at CNET. All right, everybody is worried in the audience. When's Leo going to bring up the M1 chip? Hello, Craig. They won. Hello, Craig. That's going to be an iconic shot, isn't it? Of Craig Federighi.
Oh, you know it. We're going to see memes of that so soon. like legit memes. Like, it's going to happen real soon.
Oh, my God.
Have you have hair already? Like that? You've got to have that photo.
The premise of that in the Apple video last week.
It's like a Pulp Fiction still.
It is, isn't it? It's just wild. Was the instant on Mac laptops. The funny thing is, Mac laptops have always been instant on. I have never had a delay to opening up the Mac laptop. I don't know why they decided to pick that. There's so many other things you could talk. But I did want to point out there have been a couple of really useful articles in the aftermath of this. What happens with any Apple event, at least it does for me, even without Steve Jobs, there is a reality distortion field. They're so good at marketing that you watch this and you start drooling and you say, I gotta have that. I wanna have that. So it's really important to step back after that and say, okay, but really, what is it? Is it gonna, what's the difference gonna be? And also, of course, for everybody, independent press to get, and users to get their hands on these devices and see what they really are like in the real world. So a couple of things have been happening over the last 2 weeks. First of all, people are getting their new MacBook Airs or MacBook Pros or new Mac Minis with the M1 chip. And there has been, in general, huge excitement. People are saying, this thing is, these are fast. This is battery life that to die for. These are really nice machines with none of the flaws people were worried about with the first generation product. And the next thing that's happened is I think some very good journalists have stepped up. Ars Technica had a great piece with Craig Federighi, Johnny Cerugi, and who else? There was a third person in there talking about the process of design. And Om Malik, who I miss Giga Om. And Om is, you know, now he's a VC, but he's still got that journalist hat on. He spent some time talking about the M1 chip and some really interesting conversations about what it means. And he said, and I think this is kind of true, that this is really what, from day one, Steve Jobs was aiming for. This was, he calls it Steve Jobs' last gambit. We're learning that Apple's been planning this for years, at least 3 years. It takes 3 years for them to conceive of a chip from then to shipping it. And so they're aiming some degree into the future. I also think, and this is, again, taking off from Om, the M1 is a phase change in desktop computing that... Mm. Something has happened that will change Intel, that will change AMD, that will change Windows forever. One of the things he says, chips have become so complex that you need integration and specialization to create better performance and control power consumption. That's one of the advantages Apple has. They do the software, they do the hardware, and they do all the hardware now. He also says, and I thought this was interesting when I saw the chip, a huge amount of it is devoted to machine learning. He said machine learning will define the capabilities of software in the future. The unified memory architecture, which means RAM is much faster, perhaps more efficient. You may not need as much RAM. Talk me off the ledge. Now, I'm not going to ask Lori to do this because we've been talking about this.
Because I'm going
to
push you right over.
I know. You're going to push me off. But Lindsay and Lisa, talk me off the ledge here. Am I nuts to think that this is... I'll start with you, Lindsay, because you look at the industry as a whole, and then I'll go to Lisa because she's a Windows person. Do you think this is that kind of a phase change, an inflection point in technology? Is that too much to say?
I think it's going to take time, but it will be after a couple of years.
Yeah.
Just from a practical standpoint, anytime Apple changes something in a big way, it takes a few years to get enough adoption and enough apps out there in the ecosystem to take advantage of it, that it just takes time. I think that enough creators have this hardware and will buy this hardware that it will create change necessarily. It always does.
And you make an excellent point. I mean, I'm getting mine tomorrow, but people have taken theirs home already. Are pointing out there's a lot of software that is not native. Surprisingly large amount is, but still quite a bit of important programs aren't native. And there's some stuff that doesn't work at all.
Well, the Adobe apps aren't all ready yet.
There's a beta of Photoshop that is, and they say Lightroom next month.
Yep, but so, Illustrator, Premiere, not,
there's
so
a lot of
creators
stuff
are not
to come.
Ready yet.
Yep.
They're not going to get what they need quite yet, so they're going to wait. I mean, so years and years ago, David Carnoy, who's a tenured reviewer at CNET, convinced me, and I've stuck with it, never, ever buy a first-gen Apple product.
Yeah, that's
unless,
the conventional
unless
wisdom.
Unless you want to be a tester. I've broken that rule a few times and regretted it. Mm-hmm. Not because the products were bad, but because you realize that they were fine, but the next generation is going to be really darn good.
There's actually no question about that. The M2, the M3, the M4, if this chip is this good, will be amazing, right? So there would be good reason if you could wait to wait, I guess.
Yeah, although I am feeling, I will admit, I bought a MacBook right before this.
Yeah, see, I told everybody.
Knowing that it was coming.
I said, do not buy an Intel device now. Yeah. That's a mistake, I said.
Yeah. I did, and it was a little bit of money saving, a little bit of skepticism. Like, hey, well, I'm not going to buy the first generation anyway, and I need a new laptop. And now I'm feeling kind of sad about it. So, you know, I'm contradicting myself.
The other thing that's important is that as much as Microsoft would love to do this, they can't. They can't design their own chips because they've got OEMs. They've got Lenovo and Dell and HP and everybody's making these. They can't suddenly do what Apple's done and said, no, go, we're going to use Microsoft chips. No, they can't. They have Windows historically's biggest boat anchor has been legacy. They're not going to abandon legacy. Apple does for some reason. They don't seem, I guess because they have a tiny market share, they don't seem to mind cutting people off at the knees and saying, sorry, the future's now. Microsoft never does that. And yet, I have to think, if you're a Windows laptop user, you're looking over the fence at 22-hour battery life, at better performance, and saying, so what do you, so tell me from on the other side of the fence, Lisa, how's it look over there?
That was a good setup.
I think unless you're on a computer for 22 hours straight, battery life is going to be a lot more personal. I think the thing that made me sit up and pay attention was actually in TechCrunch, where the reviewer said, oh, this thing works like an iPad.
Matthew Panzerino, yeah.
Yeah, and then said the click is responsive, every interaction is immediate, it feels like an iOS device in the best way. And the reason I thought that was really important is because it points to a trend that we're actually seeing on the Windows side too, which is the notion that computing is not going to be based on the model that we're used to, where the keyboard and the mouse are your primary sources of input and data manipulation and data access. We're moving to a model where it's going to be tactile and immediate, and you and your data are going to flow between, your mobile device and your laptop device and back and forth. And I thought it was interesting that Apple is massaging and amplifying user expectations for a shift that's already in progress and a shift that's already been happening with people who are hardcore Surface users for quite a while.
And there's also, it feels like to some degree, Microsoft prepared for this in an interesting way, because starting next year, they're going to be selling a product where you're not even running Windows locally. You're running it in the cloud.
Yeah, no, desktop as a service is a huge and growing market for enterprise folks. And it's gotten a real boost from, 2020, because when any enterprise is faced with having to support people virtually, instead of being able to just like walk over and see why somebody is hitting the restart button repeatedly and not getting to ring it up, DAAS, it's just, you can pop in, see what they're doing, reconfigure things, reboot it for them, get it going. And, Microsoft was, I guess the best way to put it is, Microsoft is like, yes, this is going to be a thing. Yes, they've already got a really strong cloud-based position, and they've seen phenomenal growth in their cloud-based services for the enterprise, like not just Azure. We're talking like Office 365 has been great for them too. And this is another logical outgrowth of that, where
if I get
a customer to pay for a service rather than a license. Yeah.
If I could play Cyberpunk 2077 on an Android phone or a Chromebook, yeah, on Google Stadia, why the hell do I need to have Windows running on a machine?
Yeah, exactly.
Which in some ways, it almost feels like Apple might have made a strategic mistake. They focused on making a more powerful desktop while Microsoft focused on running wherever you are, right?
But are they really aiming at the same audience? For all that we're sitting here talking about this, a lot of Microsoft's bread and butter is in really almost boring or, we run the world type places like hospital offices, right, or school administrations, things like that.
Yeah.
And Apple's done a really good job of colonizing a much different set of offices and industry verticals. So I don't know if you can necessarily compare them one-to-one anymore. They're very different companies in a lot of ways. Microsoft makes an increasing percentage of its revenue quarter over quarter based on cloud-based services and data manipulation, whereas Apple is beginning to move into consumer-based services and emphasis on wearables and phones and things like that.
So maybe instead of...
You can't really do business parity, in my opinion. They're both part of like a personal computing ecosystem, but they have very different functions. I mean, it's the same thing. You can have, to use another metaphor, you can have like your KitchenAid mixer and you can have your coffee maker, and both of them can be beautifully designed and do what they're going to do, but you can't interchange them. You can't make coffee in a five-quart mixer.
Nobody says, gee, I wish I had a burr grinder in my KitchenAid. So maybe it's better to say, instead of an inflection point, well, we're at a fork in the road where computing is going to take two different directions. Is that a fair?
Now, bear in mind, this is just a personal opinion, and this is also based on, you know, watching trends in the enterprise and things like that. If you are an end user, you're probably going to conceive of computing as, this is the collection of data and experiences and apps that are in my personal cloud, and I access them through any one of a wide variety of hardware devices. For the companies, it's going to be a slightly different relationship where they're like, these are going to be the services we offer, and these are the devices and appliances we offer, and these are the configurations we offer. And you're not going to have people locked into different platforms. You're going to have them maybe locked into different services based on how easy it is to move their stuff around and access it. But if somebody is an Apple partisan, it's not, I only store things in iCloud. I never use Google Drive or Gmail. Like, that's just not how it works.
No, it isn't. No, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, Lori, it may not be a bad thing if I have an Apple computer as a consumer for my stuff that I'm doing locally and that's my product. There's been a lot of questions. Well, what about boot camp? Will I be able to run Windows on this? In fact, in the Ars Technica article, I think Craig Federighi said, that's up to Microsoft. They got to figure that out. It's not our job to get Windows running on our new Macintoshes. Mm-hmm. Maybe the answer is I don't run Windows on my Macintosh. I run Windows Virtual Desktop in a browser, and now I have everything I want. I have a cloud. Mm-hmm. I have Windows. I have a personal device that is aesthetic and beautiful and powerful. I get everything I want. Is that?
I haven't used a virtual machine yet. I'm testing out the MacBook Pro right now, and one of the things I need to do is test out a virtual machine on it. But from what I understand, the issues with other Macs having a little bit of lag using virtual machines goes away completely with the M1 chip. Right. So, you know, that's the pain point that people would say, well, that I use Boot Camp because I don't like the Mac operating system. I want the hardware that is the Mac, but I want the software that is Windows. And, you know, let's see, maybe the virtual machine is the solution to that, at least temporarily, while Boot Camp is not, you know, working for the M1 chip.
Lisa, does Windows Virtual Desktop run? It runs in a browser, right? You would just do. Or do you have a client app? How does that work? Do you know?
You know, you asked me, and I haven't actually had any hands-on time with it.
Well, nobody has. It comes out next year. I mean, I would, in theory, you could run it in a browser. Here's what I find really interesting. While a number of manufacturers, including Microsoft, have been, you know, said, well, we're going to embrace the M1 chip, but we're not going to do it right away, or, you know, Office is currently in beta. Google, within days, said, oh, here's Chrome. And I thought about it, and I realized that's actually because I think Google sees Chrome as the window into Windows Virtual Desktop. I know they see Chrome as the window into Stadia. People complain, oh, my M1, it's not going to play video games. It doesn't have a discrete GPU. Who cares? You're going to be running when that hit me, I thought, I don't have to worry about native games on my Mac, on my new Mac. Because I'm going to run Chrome native, and it's going to use WebSM or whatever technologies, PWA technologies it uses, and I can play Fortnite. I can play. I pre-ordered Cyberpunk 2077. I can play all of that because it's not running on the machine. It's running in the cloud. I'm streaming it to a browser. I think that's to me. That's why I think this is a sea change, and I don't know what it's going to how it's going to shake out. But I think you actually nailed it, Lisa, by saying yours is a personal thing. Like my wristwatch is a, you know, or a piece of jewelry is a personal object, a commodity that's mine, my phone. But it's a window into a larger tool set that is actually probably in the cloud, much of it, right? And this is Microsoft's perfectly positioned for that. All right. Nothing to say. I'm going to take a break. I knew this wouldn't go anywhere. I just try. That's all. I'm trying to bring up the M1, you know, the chat room's going, no, don't let Leo talk about it anymore. They're sick to death of it. They don't want to hear any more about it. Let me talk about LastPass. Our sponsor, they sponsor the studio. This has been, 2020 has been a tough year for everybody, including us. But I want to thank LastPass because thanks to you, LastPass, we've been able to keep the lights on and the shows rolling. LastPass does more than that. LastPass protects our most vital assets, our data. You don't want to trust your bank accounts, your websites, your customer databases to just any company. That's why LastPass has been our choice for identity and access management for years. I started using LastPass 12 years ago as my password manager. About 6 years ago, we started using LastPass Enterprise for TWIT. And I'm not alone in loving LastPass. In the G2 Fall Grid Reports, that's a peer-to-peer review site, 746 customers left user reviews, 93% of them 4 or 5 stars. People love LastPass. You know who's going to also love LastPass? Your IT department and your security folks, because it lets you take control back of your password security. You've got a central dashboard. You can see exactly what's going on in your business. Company-wide visibility. It'll not just show you who's using what, when, and where, but it'll even show you how you're progressing. For every employee, you can view their password scores. You can gain access to shared accounts, monitor group memberships, and more. You get visibility into what people are doing with those most vital resources. You get complete control of privileges. You can customize admin privileges. For instance, we have a business department that uses LastPass to access the bank accounts, things like that, QuickBooks. We can have an administrator there that can access all of that but can't get into our operations department because, you know, you've got to kind of partition everything out. No matter what your organization's source of truth, LastPass will integrate to onboard users, to sync groups, to revoke access when it's time to do that. You get complete audit reports that help you build compliance and maintain accountability, detailed reporting logs that tie actions to individuals, because that's really what you need. You need to see what your users, especially when your employees are working from home, what are they doing? What are they accessing? And making sure with multi-factor authentication that only the right people are accessing those resources. MFA goes beyond simple two-step. You've got, of course, the biometrics, the fingerprint or the face recognition or the iris recognition. But in addition to that, you have contextual multi-factor, things like geolocation and IP address. Your company can enable and require MFA. We do. You get 100-plus policies. We make sure that everybody uses two-factor. We make sure there's a minimum password requirements, lots of advanced security features. Or if you want to make it simple, out of the box, LastPass is configured for a perfect balance between convenience and security. The point is you get control. You can do whatever you need to do to make LastPass work for you. And, of course, when you're creating LastPass passwords, that password generator does long, strong, randomized passwords, keeps track of them for you, and 1,200-plus single sign-on apps. 8 awards so far for LastPass this year. PC Magazine's Editor's Choice, Fortress Cybersecurity Award, Business Insider's Best Overall Password Manager. That's just a few. I love LastPass. I use it. I'm dedicated, devoted to it. And so is our company. I think you'll feel the same way. Take control of your password security. Go to LastPass.com/twit. LastPass.com/twit. Now more than ever, with employees working from home, people all over the place, you need to take control of your identity and access management. Do it with LastPass. Speaking of encryption, Google is now rolling out end-to-end encryption default in RCS. Are you guys up on RCS? If you want to talk about this, it's kind of an inside baseball thing. But
I don't know much about the details about it, but I kind of a little bit understand generally the overarching idea behind it, which is we're talking about AMP, right? We're talking about the Google.
No. RCS is Rich Communication Services. Basically, we're talking about Google's response to Apple's messages. Apple has never, of course, put messages anywhere but on Apple devices. But people want the features that Apple's messages offer. Google was hoping that they could get the mobile carriers to do this. Mobile carriers like SMS, nobody else does. And the carriers really dragged their feet. So last year, Google finally threw up their hands and said, fine, we'll do it. They actually bought a company that did RCS. And as of this week, Google completed a rollout of RCS for all Android phones using Android Messenger. Or I guess they call it Google Messages. I don't know. You never know with Google what the hell their messaging platform is. But I guess it's now Google Messages. It has RCS, and they are starting to put in end-to-end encryption as well. And the problem is, on Apple, you're still a green bubble. Doesn't matter what you do. If you're on Android, you're a damn green bubble, and you're discriminated against. And Apple's not going to ever put Apple's messages on Android. And it's a shame because it feels like it's siloed in both cases, mostly because of
it Apple. Is. Yeah. And it has become, you're right, is 100% become a social thing. Mm-hmm. And I, without naming the teenager in question.
Is it one you own or one you rent?
It's what I own. And this one changed his entire platform because of not wanting to be a green bubble.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm literally getting left out of conversations with my friends.
Yeah. Especially group conversations. So Google has its own group chat, but if you're on an Android device and your friends are on messages from Apple, you're just kind of, you're left. They don't even say, don't let him in the group. It's just going to mess it up.
My brother's on an Android device. My mom is on an Apple device. And he's a little salty about the fact that...
you're not talking to me.
Well, yeah. I'd love to have him on a platform where I could loop him right in and message it too. I don't think it's just Android users who are out in the cold on this. It's frankly a little bit silly that my ability to create group chats and give them funky names and drop and drag stuff and ping people on either my desktop or my iPad or my phone. I don't like that it leaves out a lot of people that I know.
Yeah.
But if it is driving purchases, which it is clearly since I like,
it's they have driving no incentive purchases. To change it, do they?
No that's incentive. The
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so horrible.
These poor Android people are going to be all. Oh,
is the solution telling all your friends, does this work? I don't know. To use Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp or how to.
No, I don't Facebook know. Messenger, I mean, no. it has become because it has become a strange status and social thing. There's eye rolling. I mean, I always go to the young people. I sound so old.
No, you're not. First of all, you're sitting next to an old man, so you'll always look young. But also, this is the way it is. It's not. It's young people are the ones who are kind of solving this unilaterally, forcing us older people to go along for the ride.
Well, you know what they're just going to Discord.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, in reality,
that's the future.
It's not going to be Android or iOS or one messaging platform or another that fixes this. It's going to be a complete third party, and that's how they talk to each other.
You know what's good about
They're on Discord servers, and they
Mom's not on Discord.
Actually, a little funny story. I am on Discord, and the reason I'm on Discord is because I couldn't get my kids to text me back. So I joined Discord, and my username is Your Mom. And I friended one of my children. And he came back to me and was like, LOL, ha, ha, ha. And I'm like, no, really, I'm your mom.
Oh, my God.
And he was like, oh, I thought you were just somebody, like a friend of mine trolling me. And then both of my kids have been like, this is great.
Oh.
It's so easy to get in touch with you.
Oh.
They
well,
love
I
it.
Don't care That's what the care. Platform is. Can we just all agree? It's fine with me. Let's go Discord, everybody.
Discord is it. Yeah. That's where the kids are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just like you're saying, Lindsay, on the one hand, there is this sort of like status pressure, the, you know, green bubble, blue bubble situation. But that's not like the kids are going to go where they're going to go. And it doesn't matter whether Android has a messages app. It doesn't matter whether Apple has a messages app. It's really, they're going to find their own ways to like have group conversations and chats and things like that. And it's going to change. Right now it's Discord. It'll be something else in a year or two. That's
the problem with the Utes is they just, they're
they're fickle.
They're fickle.
Well, I feel like you can watch the Utes, as it were, to see where they're going with communications, preferences, and technologies, mm-hmm. and how that's going to shape things in the workplace down the line. And the fact that they're so into Discord now, like, wait till Discord hits the enterprise in about 5 to 6 years.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that one of my kids actually wrote a letter to the principal of his high school to try to convince the high school to use Discord instead of Zoom for virtual teaching.
Oh, I guess you could, right? You could. Can you do in Discord everything you do in Zoom or Teams or Skype?
It's very much like Slack. Yeah. It's like Slack, but with more voice emphasis.
Yeah.
I'm not completely ignorant. I have a Discord account. I created one so that I could play on the Vatican's Minecraft server.
Yeah. But well, this may explain why Slack is boosting its ability to leave like little audio snippets and things like that there too, as they recognize where that audience is coming from.
So, oh my gosh. Tell me now, if I use Discord, could I see this is Apple again? They don't let you say, I don't want to use messages as my default. They don't. You can't change that.
No. Yeah. That's never going to change. Apple's not going to let that happen.
That's too bad because that means I'm kind of stuck still on an iPhone using messages until somebody does a gateway or something. Maybe there's a messages to Discord gateway. Isn't this a little bit of the risk Apple faces by not opening up messages, that somebody's going to come along, be cross-platform, and just take the market away from them? Is that
so? I think the problem is, from my perspective, and maybe this isn't the way everybody uses their devices, but the messages app on iPhone is the default messages app, and that's why I use it. It has nothing to do with where my friends are, what platforms they use. It's the text messaging thing for the phones. You know, I'm old enough that there was just text messaging back then. And so that's default where I go. So I have, you know, a number of different ways that I chat with people, Slack and Discord and all these other things. But if I want to talk to a person, I just go to the thing where I text message people, which on the phone is the messages app. Yeah. I don't think it's a competition type thing. If I was on an Android phone, that is the thing that I would use to text message people. That's just how I think of it. I really do, like, again, I'm going back to that. It's really a status thing when you can say, I've got the blue bubble. I don't think it's that the messages app is so great and doesn't everybody wish they had something similar. No, everybody just wants a blue bubble. That's all it is, you know?
Is there any chance Apple will adopt RCS? No. They don't need RCS. They have all the features of RCS in their siloed app. It's market pressures. You know, so what can convince? See, this is a mess. That's the problem. It's too fragmented a market for any one thing, even in Google's RCS, to threaten Apple's messages. So they could just sit back and say, yeah, fine, have fun.
But you know what they should do, and they might do, because the user experience is important to Apple. And what they should do, and hopefully would do, is make the kind of features that interact with Android devices, for example, a lot easier. So renaming a group message or tapbacks that you know, make sense to an Android user, or you know, being able to pin the group message that has an Android user in it. Like, if Apple could, on the iPhone's end, make the interaction with Android users a better experience for the iPhone user, they don't need to worry about what the Android user thinks, but they need to worry about what I think. And if it's frustrating to me that I can't have the same kind of experience with my friends who use Android, I'm mad at Apple. I'm not mad at Android. So
good.
I think
question
it would be
good
for
the chat
them
room.
To make some changes.
Is Apple doing this to make it for ecosystem lock-in? Is it just anti-competitive that they're saying, nope, not going to do it? You can't change your default messenger. We're not going to incorporate these features. It's us or our way or the highway.
I don't think that is in this case. And it's because you can use any other messaging app that you want. So they don't lock you into messages. It you can at any point in time open up the Discord app and use that. You can hide the messages app and put Discord right there on your main page and make that be the thing that you always open. You can make it your default messaging app by just not using the other service. So I don't think it's really a lock-in sort of anti-competitive situation for this particular thing. I think it's really just an issue of it's been such a nice, pleasurable experience for iPhone users for so long that it's kind of a joke now. And people want to make fun of Android's lack of that kind of feature. And then again, like I was saying, there's the user experience from the perspective of an iPhone user, but it's really not that big of a deal, you know?
Are you all iPhone users? Anybody use Yes. Android? Nope. All iPhone users. See, I think Yep. whether Apple's doing it intentionally or not, it does have that impact. I fell in love with Telegram. I wanted everybody to use Telegram. I've gone through all these stages. AOL, Instant Messenger. Anybody remember that? Mm-hmm. But eventually, I just gave in. I just sank into the warm bath that is the Apple ecosystem. Right? But didn't we all do that?
Yeah.
It's like, just use messages.
Yes, we did. And that's why I do maintain that it may not be anti-competitive because there are alternatives, but it's definitely a market share move.
Yeah. I think people do, like your, was it you who were saying that one of you, or maybe it was Lisa?
One of my kids.
One of your kids said, we don't, get a real phone. Yeah. My son
trying to tell my brother that too, so that he can join
a real
the family
phone.
Chat.
Yeah, no. Just don't you want to be in the family? What do you hate
but
us?
But you can be in the family chat. It's just from your perspective on your phone, you can't rename the conversation and all the fun things. So it's you, not your brother, right? Like your brother's like, what? I'm just
but
text
then it
me.
May make your choices exclusionary. I mean, what was actually happening with these teenagers was that they were leaving people out of the group chats because they were green bubbles.
We don't want you in
and
our
they
chat.
Wanted to keep the group all blue because the functionality was different and it annoyed them.
That's right.
So they just ditched the people who were green.
Do you lose some things with green bubbles in there? It's not like
the thing is I chat with my mom. She'll ping me when I'm at work in the middle of the day. And it's easier for me to just, I'm on my laptop. I can look something up, drop it back into her chat and it's done. And that's so easy. I love that I can just move between things that have keyboards and things that are mobile devices. Whereas if it's the family chat with my brother, I can only access that on the phone. And
but you can turn on continuity and use your computer as a phone and receive those text messages. So
another reason
of doing that.
Another reason why you should probably be running a Macintosh computer as well as an iPhone. You see how that happens?
Yes.
Just relax in the nice warm bath of Apple. It's put some bubbles in there, enjoy, light some candles.
Blue bubbles.
No blue bubbles, no green bubbles, only blue bubbles. Just enjoy.
I really do think it's something that Apple should work to make better for me, the Apple buyer, and all the people like me. Don't bring it to Android. Just make the iPhone a better user experience for people who have to have conversations with Android users, so that it's not an issue anymore.
Do you think there's much pressure from Apple's users to do that? I don't care. Just get rid of the green bubbles. You're just not in my life.
But I do think, I think that you're right.
Isn't that mean? But it's true.
I do think that there is the reason that Apple needs to make it a better experience is because back to the earlier conversation, people are just going to leave texting altogether.
Right.
It's going to become, and I've sort of noticed this happening already. Like that's just not where a lot of the back and forth that I used to have with some people now happens in other apps because it's more cumbersome to do it via text for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about these like microscopic choices of like that really is deciding between something that's going to take you 5 milliseconds and something that's going to take you 7 milliseconds. It seems kind of like a silly decision, but these things happen over time and you move toward the system that is more frictionless. Mm-hmm. And if people stop texting, it won't really matter to Apple and it'll hurt them in the long run. So anyway, they should work on making it better.
So there will be a business consequence to Apple if they don't realize this at some point.
I think so. People won't care about the blue bubbles because they won't be using any bubbles.
You know, it seemed like the only company that could at this point be competitive was Zoom. Can Zoom do all of the, they don't have a messaging capability really. They need
Not
to
really.
Work on that. Or is that where, maybe that's where Slack and Skype and Teams went wrong, is by putting too much stuff in. No? Nobody else is competing.
Well, I think back to it's Discord and Slack for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people who used to text me for work reasons now use Slack.
So tell me on Discord, you have to create a family group though, right? Discord is all group related. So
it's very much like Slack. You can create a Discord server. So the kids, they're all into creating servers.
They
learn
that
from Minecraft.
Right.
So they create Discord servers, but you can do group chats. You can have one-on-one conversations and a lot of it. And then you can switch seamlessly to voice, which is why a lot of them use it. It started as a gaming platform.
Yeah, I know.
So gamers would use
yeah.
it to have
yeah.
you know, voice conversation.
So email was originally like this. Nobody remembers this, but if you had MCI mail, you couldn't email somebody with Genie or CompuServe. Mm-hmm. They didn't go. And eventually we said, that's stupid. We should federate and everybody should be able to email everybody. We solved it and went away. Then the message wars began. And for a little while we had, AOL's instant messenger ICQ was the first. Then there was AIM. And for a while there were programs that would let you do all of them, like Pigeon and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they changed the protocols because they didn't want that. And as a result, that was a mistake. They faded away. Whatever happened to ICQ and AIM, they shut the servers down. They're over. But we're still in that same Tower of Babel that we were in 20 years ago, mm-hmm. where we have all these messenger platforms. The names have changed, but it's the same experience from the point of view of the user. You have to figure out, well, what platform is Dad on and how can I message Joey? Mm. I wish we, remember Trillion? I wish we had, how do we solve this? It's not a good solution.
Trillion was too early. I think it is being solved in a similar way now, just at a time when people are ready for it because their connections are faster and they're more used to, and app infrastructure is just easier now.
Doesn't Discord also have kind of a bad boy feel to it?
I will be really transparent here. Everything I know about it comes from just a couple of very small conversations that I have on it, and I'm not deep in it. But
I feel like it's where hackers hang out.
It's a lot. It is really well moderated, is my perception.
Okay.
That people take their Discord server moderation very seriously, and it's in Discord's best interest to prevent nefarious stuff from happening because so many kids are on it. Yeah. The second some legislature finds out that bad crap is happening on Discord, it'll be bad. So I get the impression that it's actually pretty well regulated internally.
All right. Take a little break. I want to take you back in time when we come back. Yeah. As Flash, there's actually two big deals going on. Flash has gone by the wayside. This is it for Flash. One more month. Thank God. And it is the 35th anniversary of a technology that changed the world. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Our show today brought to you quite literally by our content delivery network, CashFly. CashFly has been around since 1999. We've been using them since practically the very beginning. In the earliest days of the podcast, I was, letting people download it from a website. That didn't work out so well. Then I tried BitTorrent. I remember the days when I'd come, the show would be over. I said, okay, please seed us so everybody can download it. It was a pain. Finally, Matt Levine of CashFly, one of the founders, came along and said, Leo, try CashFly. And it has been such a burden off my shoulders. CashFly, brings our content closer to the users. So when you download the show, it's faster. It's instantaneous. Because there's so many servers all over the world, you never have to worry about the servers down. People can't get the show. There's 100% SLA guarantee from CacheFly. That's awesome. I never get the 3M call, you know. Oh, the server's down. I have to log in and make sure I haven't exceeded my capacity, that kind of thing. I just love it. But there is one little thing that any CDN has to deal with. It's a caching server. So when you put up a new show, the first thing that has to happen is the various servers all over the world, when somebody hits it and says, I want the latest edition of TWiT, that server says, I don't have it, and has to go back to the source and get it. And that could be a real problem for you, downloading from the origin. That's what we call a cache miss. When there's a cache miss, they have to go to Amazon's S3 or wherever you store your content, download it. That slows it down for your users. It could cause buffering if you're streaming. It could be a real problem. It can also cost you a lot of money, because sometimes the real expense is the cache miss, where you've got data transfer out feeds from S3 or whatever to get to your caching server. That's why we've been actually using this since day one, but now CacheFly is offering this to everybody. Storage Optimization System, or SOS. It's a dedicated storage space on CacheFly. So when we upload our podcast, we don't upload it to S3. We upload it to CacheFly, which means your data and content is closer to your customers or your consumers. You save thousands a month by shielding your origin. CacheFly guarantees no cache misses. What does that mean? No buffering, no slowdowns. Your download speeds will be drastically improved, and your data transfer out fees will be significantly reduced, and you'll get 100% cache hit ratio. It is so awesome. You're going to love SOS. It's just one more reason to use CacheFly. They've also, by the way, increased their POPs. They just got 6 new points of presence in South America, which means they're now serving 10 times the amount of traffic in Latin America since last year. But not only is it not getting slower, they've actually drastically improved their performance in the region while they're taking on a much higher traffic load. We love it. We have listeners all over the world, and CacheFly serves them with servers near them. Whether your end users are in North America, Latin America, the Caribbean, Europe, the Middle East, Asia Pacific, your content is delivered quickly and reliably. You can expect consistency and performance everywhere in the world. And because of CacheFly's reliable throughput and scalability, they're as fast as 500% faster than other CDNs. So get SOS, get that 100% uptime SLA guaranteed, industry-leading global performance, stream podcasts, videos, digital downloads to global audiences of any size. It's the best thing that ever happened to us. It should happen to you, too. And because of SOS, cache misses delivered 5 times faster, because you're getting it from the CacheFly network instead of some third party across the public internet. CacheFly, I want to congratulate them too. They're partnering with World Central Kitchen to help people in need. They've donated over $50,000, serving over 300,000 warm meals to people who are struggling in these difficult times. Great company, great people doing just what you need. Look at all the people who use CacheFly, including us. Right now, if you want to know if CacheFly can save you, just for TWiT listeners, CacheFly is giving away a complimentary detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends. Just bring your bill and your usage to twit.cachefly.com. Chances are you're spending more than 20% more than you have to. Just find out. Go to twit.cachefly.com. No hard sell, just nice people who will help you get your content where it's going. twit.cachefly.com. Thank you, CacheFly, for your support. Nobody's going to mourn Flash, right?
That's true.
And thank you, Steve Jobs, because it really was Steve who wrote the letter, public letter on the front page of Apple.com saying, we're not going to put Flash on our iPhone, and then later the iPad. It's over. Get over it. It took it more than 10 years to die. But at the end of the year, even Adobe finally says, it's over for Flash. Well, the Internet Archive is making sure it's not over for Flash.
Good for the Internet Archive.
I love the Internet Archive. Good for them. Yeah. They have decided that that now you don't, the beauty of this is you don't need Flash to see Flash on the Internet Archive. They're using WebSM and a Flash emulator called Ruffle so that you can see Flash items. And ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourself because it's peanut butter jelly time. Let's just go back in time from the year 2000.
Peanut butter jelly time.
There it is. Remember that little
that made me really happy
pixelated banana. Oh man, you got to go to the Internet Archive's Flash Archive because there's so many things that will make you happy. Remember this? What was wrong with us in those days?
We were younger?
What? I don't...
It's not that different now. I mean, now it's just... This just happens in memes.
Yeah, you're right, but I don't know. Maybe it's, maybe I'm getting old, but I feel like the memes aren't as good as they...
Radiskull.
As they use... Oh, which one do you want to see?
Oh, my gosh.
How about this one?
What happened? Someone set up Octobot. We get signal. What? Main screen turn on. It's you.
How are you, gentlemen? All your base are belong to us.
Now that's the meme that never ended, right? The never ending meme. Which one you want, Radiskull? Oh, I don't know if I'm ready for Radiskull. This is
It was just he had a whole like theme song and everything. It was unbelievable.
Radiskull and Devil Doll. So thank you, Internet Archive, for keeping this stuff around. And you know what? Ruffle does a really good job of just taking the SWF file and playing it smoothly, fluidly in your browser. No need. Here's, remember Fly Guy? No need to install Flash in your browser. This one doesn't have any audio, I don't think, but this was a fun little... You could. This probably was the beginning of the dinosaur animation, right? on Google when you get a... Here's Fly Guy, and I can use the arrows to start flying. Life was simpler in those days.
It's so restful.
So restful.
I remember this one.
You remember this?
I do not. I don't remember it.
This, I don't, yeah, I mean, there's not much to it. That's
he's
it
just
right
a
there.
Fly guy.
2002, 18 years ago. All right, thank you. I just had to do that. I had to punish you with that. And there's one other thing. It was on November 20th. I bet you Lisa will know this one. November 20th, 35 years ago, 1985. What happened that changed the world forever? It was the release of Windows 1.0. Which was, by the way, barely Windows. It was really a shell on top of DOS for many, many years. Version 1, November 20th, 1985.
Wow.
Yeah. And that gave rise to a few articles. Here's one, happy birthday to Windows, showing... Oh, that was it. Nope, maybe that's not it. A few articles showing the old user interface. Boy, it was ugly. It was really bad. Did you celebrate at Windows IT Pro? Did you even know that that anniversary happened?
I don't think we did. See, possibly
you
because...
You gotta listen to Twit because that's where all the stuff is happening.
Yeah. No, I think one of the reasons we didn't also is for the last few years, one of the stories that we've been following is Microsoft's persistent downplaying of Windows as a flagship sort of product.
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
Because they've really been shifting a lot of, I mean, Satya Nadella has been so consistent about the messaging where Microsoft is a data-led company. It's all about data analysis and empowering users to be more productive. And it's been really notable that in most of the keynote speeches he's given at marquee events, even during the virtual events we've had this year, Windows doesn't really come up as one of the elements that Microsoft sees. I mean, it's a product they have. They're clearly not going to abandon it, but it's not the product that they're staking their future on. So I don't think they're going to do a whole lot of, and then we rolled this out.
Yeah, maybe they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it was under Satya Nadella that Microsoft's mission statement changed from, well, first it was Windows in every computer, right? Or a computer in every house.
A Windows computer on every desktop.
Yeah, running Microsoft Windows. And then under Nadella, it was, we want to be, he said many times, we want to be wherever our customers are, but the best experience will be on Windows. And then they dropped that second part.
In 2015 at Ignite, they rolled out a mobile-first, cloud-first computing experience. That was the positioning they used. And they reiterated the message, a mobile-first, cloud-first computing experience, which I thought was kind of a big deal, because what it effectively says is that your choice of device or your choice of operating system matters a lot less than the portability of computing, period. And for the last few years, they've talked about how Microsoft's mission statement now is to empower every user on the planet through technology. So they're really like going big and vague at this point.
That's so vague. And sounds like every mission statement ever written for anything.
Mission statements are terrible, aren't they?
I'm not being entirely fair to it because I can't recite all of it, because I believe it's you're empowering every user. It has something to do with the quality of access at some point. And there's something in there about using data as part of the empowering. But I agree with you. It's a very pie in the sky. In theory, like the skies will be clean and the temperatures will drop and we'll have equality of opportunity if we can all just get into Azure. And you're like, really?
Clearly, Satya Nadella is one of the best CEOs ever. He transformed Microsoft. It revitalized the stock price, revitalized the company, turned it around on a dime.
Oh, yeah.
But every time he talks, I glaze over. It is just, it's impossible. He's not good at concrete.
Have you read Hit Refresh, which is
no,
the book
I should.
That you brought? I urge you to read that, because if you don't like his speaking style, you might find the book more accessible. And what he does is he lays out a lot of the turnaround story for the company and how that's affect. And you also kind of, I feel like you also get a really strong sense of where the company is going to be piloting itself over the next 5 to 10 years as well.
Well, maybe he should get whoever wrote that book to write his speeches, because it's not here.
Lisa, I have a question
before
for you.
Do that. Here's what a CEO at Microsoft really ought to be like.
How much do you think this advanced operating environment is worth? Wait just 1 minute before you answer. Watch as Windows integrates Lotus 1-3 with Miami Vice. Now we can take this Ferrari and paste it right into Windows Write. Now how much do you think Microsoft Windows is worth? Don't answer. Wait until you see Windows Write and Windows Paint, and to listen to what else you get at no extra charge. The MS-DOS executive, an appointment calendar, a card file, a notepad, a clock, a control panel, a terminal, a principal, a RAM driver, and can you believe it? Reversi. That's right. All these features in Reversi, all for just how much did you guess? 500? 1,000?
Oh my gosh!
No, it's just $99! That's right! It's $99! It's an incredible value, but it's true! It's Windows from Microsoft! Order today! P.O. Box 286 DOS! Except in Nebraska!
I don't know how they got Ballmer to do that.
Oh my gosh, that's delightful.
I don't think he was a CEO at the time. Bill was still a CEO.
No, he was
whatever, head of sales or whatever it was. But
I've always admired that kind of big sales energy.
Yeah. I'm sure that was an internal.
It's so alien to my temperament.
Yeah, that was a video intended for internal use only, probably at a sales meeting where they were laughing and laughing. But it lives on YouTube. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, the internet never forgets.
For telling us about that. I'm sorry, Lori. What did you want to say? I apologize.
I was thinking, like, just from the perspective of a person who follows the Apple ecosystem, There are times, in fact, up until, you know, 3 weeks ago, that a lot of people who were following Apple were saying that, you know, they're kind of forgetting about the Mac, and they're forgetting about their, you know, they've moved on and the Mac is no longer important to them. And then now suddenly, oh, absolutely, that's not the case. Do you think Microsoft is going to just sort of forget about Windows? Do you think that we're going to see a future where there's not really much about Windows at all anymore, and they're really just going to be taking care of legacy Windows, but it's not, we're not going to see the next Windows iteration or something like that?
All right. That's a great question. And you can tell it's a great question because I'm saying the stalling thing. That's a great question to try to organize my thoughts as I answer it. So to begin to answer it, I'm going to backtrack just a little to two beginning premises or two beginning facts that I'm going to build the rest of my answer on. And the first is that Windows still makes Microsoft a serious amount of money every quarter. Like, they have three different business divisions. Windows is in one, Azure is in one, and productivity, which is where they have Office 365, is in the third. And their Windows and hardware divisions still, it's only been very recently that Azure has overtaken that division in terms of reliably producing revenue every quarter. So Windows still makes them money. That's number one. Number two is that when they rolled out Windows 10, they also rolled out the concept of continuous updates and began to promote the idea of Windows as a service, which is kind of a logical predecessor to desktop as a service. So Oh, and the third thing I should add, now that I'm thinking about it, is over the course of the last, I want to say, 2 years or so, we have seen them doing two things with end-user software. One, they're making it really easy to complete software functions across different applications. So if you are in Teams and someone says, hey, can you check out this spreadsheet? You can launch a specific file within Teams and edit it within Teams. You don't have to switch over to Excel, open it, edit it there, and then re-upload it to Teams again. The goal that they're moving towards is they want to break down the siloed functions of apps and just rather have people think in terms of task flow. And number two, they want people to think of Teams as the primary space from which they work. So if you take a look at all three of those things, I think Windows is going to be a product that they keep up as long as they do have a legacy base that can't afford to pull in new computers and push everybody to a cloud-first thing. But I think at this point, it's a product they maintain because it makes them money and because they have a user base. And as people move off of it, they're not going to go out of their way to continually reinvent a desktop experience anymore. I think they're going to move you more towards the idea of a collaborative workspace where you can move things in and out of Teams and or OneDrive or SharePoint. You can open stuff up like in Windows, you can open things up like in Word, or you can answer emails even from Teams. Right. But they're shifting the definition of how they see you working on a computer.
As long as computing has been around, this has been like the holy grail. I can remember Microsoft talking about this with, you know, the document, you know, with Calm, Object Desktop. I remember Apple. Microsoft was going to create, what was that, Longhorn, which was a document-based way of thinking of things. Apple's was doing the same thing with IBM. It was called Pink. This is, as long as computing's been around, people have said, no, we went on completely the wrong way. All users care about is their data and manipulating it. That's all that really any computing interaction is. We focused on the operating system. That's infrastructure. Who cares about that? That's like, you know, saying, I want to go to the bathroom, but first I got to install plumbing. It's not what users want to do. And that's why I think in the long run, the future clearly for Microsoft and maybe for all computing is cloud-based. And I think if you're a small business or a big business, it's very attractive to say, well, just buy thin clients. You don't need to buy these big computers. You no longer have to worry about updates. You no longer have to worry about plumbing. You no longer have to worry about security. You just have a productivity tool. And by the way, it's the same whether you're sitting at your desk at home or your desk at work or in your car on your phone. It's the same data. It's, and that's where the cloud is slowly moving us to. And it, I think clearly this is what Satya Nadella is thinking, mm-hmm. is that's the future of Office. That's the future of Windows. And oh, by the way, I get a monthly subscription. So I'm happy. I've got an annuity. The stock market loves that. My stock mm-hmm. price is going to go up. Everybody's going to be happy.
I think the hazard is that we talk like this as if you don't have like cash-strapped municipal governments or school districts or hospitals or even highly specialized industries that won't have the money to upgrade to this right. type of computing experience. Yeah. And I
that's
think
the long, dragging tail that's never going away. I understand. I agree.
And one of the things one of the use cases that I see and hear about whenever I'm back in the before time when I could talk to people at conferences is you'd have somebody who worked in an industry, like say they ran a printing shop, and I would find out that they had a computer that they still hadn't upgraded from right. Windows 95 because there was a piece of proprietary right. software they had yep. paid somebody to write way back when. Yep. And mm-hmm. they were like, I don't have the money to migrate to write another version of the software and migrate it again. So we've jury-rigged this entire workflow around obsolete tech, and we just try to keep it running. I think that happens a lot more than
well, it's not just
tech
Windows.
Companies are willing to
it's
talk
not just
about.
Windows.
No, it's not. It's
Look
Apple.
At Android. Look at Android.
Well, there are lots of people who are still running Macs that are not even yeah. OS X Macs yeah. because mm-hmm. they're like, I got this piece of software I wrote back in 1998. Yeah. It does what I need it to do. I can't upgrade it.
But almost all the security problems happen to that layer of people because they're not getting updated. They're not doing any. I mean, you know that the Microsoft, mm-hmm. Apple, and Google would love to get rid of the $50 Android phones that haven't been updated since Cupcake. They would love to get rid of, you know, Windows 95. What? Stop.
I mean, unless a member of Friends is going to come and personally give you a new computer, the odds of
I know. Being able well, to- that's different. If Joey gives it to me, I'll take it.
No, so- but that's the thing, though. It's not even, it's not the person, it's not the computer, it's the software. And that's where that problem is.
But couldn't that all run in virtualization? If you were going
to
run Windows 95.
You have to find a way to fund these people's mm-hmm. business workflows or fund these highly industry-specific or location-specific apps that still work. They just don't work because the person who wrote them 20 years ago wasn't thinking, oh my gosh, pretty soon everything we do is going to be living on servers that are in rural wherever.
But Windows Virtual Desktop, they even, Microsoft even says, and you can run Windows 7. I don't know if they mentioned Windows 95, but I mean, that's the safe way to run Windows 7. Mm-hmm. That's how they, or XP, or even, I guess, 95, but you'd have to get that proprietary program up to there. And then there's the hardware issue because that line printer or that, CNC hardware only works with a serial connection over an RS-232 port to a computer running, you know, DOS, then you're going to have a problem, I guess.
So until all of those, you know, small business owners who have those proprietary apps retire, we're going to be holding on to this stuff.
So it takes longer than you think, but it's, I mean, there's still people driving, you know, 1963 Thunderbirds. But but in general, what you do is you upgrade, you know, your emissions requirements, and you slowly phase those people out, and you slowly move into the future. And I'm sure that's what Microsoft wants to do. Mm-hmm. And then there's this guy who's booting up his PC from a vinyl disc.
Oh my God!
What? Did you what? My question exactly. So
what?
Yeah.
I just know.
Yes.
No.
This
yes.
is like the most hipster thing I've ever seen
this
in my
hipster.
Life. Does this guy have like a waxed mustache?
This is from Boggin Jr., the Boggin Jr. blog, BOGINJR.com. So, first of all, you have to have an IBM PC with a cassette interface. That's the original 1981 IBM PC. And what you have to do is when this computer turns on, first it, here, I can show you a video of it. First thing that happens is, it hits the floppy disk. You'll hear that first. Oh, no floppy. Then it looks for a hard drive. Oh, no hard drive. Okay, fire up the cassette interface. And you could say, look, it says needle on the record. So you have to drop the needle on the record player. He's going to drop the needle on the record player.
Here we go. This is the most steampunk thing I've seen in a while.
He's got the audio connected to the cassette port interface. Now, hold your ears because this is ugly when you're going to hear it, but you're going to hear what, and anybody who's as old as me remembers using cassette to boot up computers or to save programs, and you're going to hear the noise that we used to hear when that happened. Here it goes. We're dropping the needle. Okay.
Slowest needle drop ever.
Well, you got to be careful. You don't want to scratch it. And now it sounds like a modem a little bit, right?
Yeah.
That's data. Yeah. That's the master boot record.
Makes sense.
How did he press that record?
He must have a record press. He's got like a record lathe.
He must have a lathe, yeah.
Yeah.
This is incredible.
And then hard drive now detected because the computer is booting.
I hope somebody somewhere is writing like the techno thriller where it turns out that somebody has smuggled a whole lot of data out of the country, disguised like nothing but, hipster records.
Yeah.
Where they're like, this guy has a really boring Arctic Monkeys collection. Let's let him go. And it turns out instead it's like, no, these are industry secrets.
There is a guy who's... Go ahead.
There's always something to be gotten out of experiments, right? Like you're sitting there thinking, why would you do this? To show that you can, but then maybe there's something you can get out of it.
I don't know if I can find this, but there is a guy who's written an operating system for the end times he sees coming in the next 30 years when China splits with us, they no longer make our chips, or we can't figure out how to make them, whatever. Mm-hmm. And all we can do is scavenge parts from speak and spells, and, just chips that are lying around. And he's written an operating system for these simple chips so that we can, at some point, get back to computing.
The Teddy Ruxpin operating system?
Yes. Yeah. I can't. I wish I could find it. It's something like, I can't remember the name of it. It's like the End Times operating system or something like that. It's hysterical. But he says, look, you're going to be glad that I spend the time writing this because someday
you're gonna need it.
Or maybe you're going to need a vinyl record that can boot up your old IBM.
I feel like we're thinking small. You should actually be looking at trying to make operating systems that reproduce themselves based on fungi or
there you go.
Or something that you can
DNA,
grow.
DNA chips. Yeah, something you can grow. And then you just save the seeds and, you can grow another computer. Maybe... That's what the aliens did 5,000 years ago.
Maybe that's what we are right now.
Sounds
like you just finished watching Raised by Wolves.
Yeah. Oh my God. Can you believe? Was that wild? But wasn't that frustrating at the end? Like, we made no progress.
Wait. I'm watching I haven't seen the end.
Okay. No spoilers.
Okay. No spoilers. Let's just say that. It's a journey.
It's a journey is right.
With a destination that you may not understand.
Yeah, but that's okay. But isn't she cool when she takes out her eyes and flies and goes, and people explode? That's cool.
Yeah.
This doesn't make me want to watch it.
It is. Well, what's interesting is the first few episodes were created by, what's his name? The aliens guy. And
Ridley Scott.
And they have a real Ridley Scott sensibility to them. You could see. And then it feels like Ridley left.
Well, I think there were different directors for almost every episode.
Yeah, he did the first couple.
And you can feel it.
Yes. It feels like, I'm done with this. And then somebody else said, well, let's see where we can go. It's like three people wrote the novel. And at first it started to be an Aliens prequel, didn't it? Don't you think that was kind of what was going on? And then it got weird.
Yeah, I can kind of see what you mean by that, yeah.
How far are you?
It did feel that way, and then it,
It took a left turn.
It took like four left turns.
You know what happens when you take more than three left turns? You end up where you started. You're like third episode, fourth episode?
I think I'm the fourth episode, and I'm early enough in that a lot of big things have happened.
No, it's about to. Yeah, it gets slow for a little bit, and then what?
Well, and then I feel
that way anyway.
you hit what, and then wait, what? And then, huh?
Raised by Wolves,
and
which
then, huh?
Is only on HBO Max, I think. Right, that's an HBO Max exclusive. But it's, you know, it's interesting. It's like, I don't know what happened.
What you said, what you said that kicked that off is the sort of like, is it, was this all left by the aliens?
That started everything? That's obvious.
I feel like it has that vibe.
It's obvious.
Yeah. No spoilers.
Psychedelics are left, alien technologies are left behind to mess with us. Right?
As
everybody knows that. No, maybe not. Maybe I took too many psychedelics, and that's just what happens.
I was here for a technology podcast.
Oh, yeah. Back we go. A couple of things real quick before we wrap it up, because it is getting late. But there was a lot, actually, given that we're in the end times. There was a lot to talk about. Google is becoming a bank. Google Pay is going to now have, which is funny, because Google did this once before with a credit card, remember? Mm-hmm. Now they're going to start, by next year, they will have banks all over the world. They'll have, they have a bunch of partners. The launch partners, Citi and Stanford Federal Credit Union. You're going to be able to get a credit card. You're going to be able to do payments. This has been the holy grail. I always thought this was what Apple and Facebook were going to do. And they seem to have lost their nerve. But in some parts of the developing world, like in Africa, M-Pesa is the dominant financial instrument because they don't have computers. They don't really have banks, but they seem to have smartphones. And so they use that for everything. In China, WeChat is the complete, like, is everything. And I feel like Google would love to be the everything company, right?
Well, I think that they always try to pave. Google's interesting. I can remember Google Loon, like making sure that in order for Google to succeed, everybody has to have an internet connection. And also for Google to succeed, everybody needs to be able to make payments. Right. So it kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, let's make it easy for people to get access to things they might not have access for. And given how Google often behaves, it would make sense for them to go for sort of the small transactions, people early in their economic life.
Right.
I bet that's what they're going to do.
And though if you're threatened by it, you shouldn't be, because Google loses interest so quickly that next year it'll be something else they'll be doing.
Well, I think that they would argue that they give it away from things that don't work.
Yeah, banks don't work, so we're going to do it better. Yeah.
But isn't that same, aren't they kind of improving or replacing their sort of, I'm not sure what the name of Google uses for it, but it's Apple's version of the wallet app where they're going to have all kinds of, you know, budget tracking stuff, but then they're also going to be collecting your data so that they can tell you what you should buy with the money that they're setting up for you through their partner banks.
We call that personal finance.
Interesting things going on.
We call that personal finance insights, deals and banking services. Yeah. This is coming next year. Another thing Google's doing is Stadia. In fact, this is not just Google at this point. Microsoft with their streaming gaming service, xCloud, NVIDIA with their streaming gaming service, GeForce, all have solved the Apple Store problem the same way with a web app, a progressive web app running in Safari. You can play Fortnite. You'll be able to play Cyberpunk 2077 when it comes out December 10th. GeForce now works on Chromebooks, but it's going to be coming soon. And I think this is the proof of concept for streaming Windows, because if you can stream AAA game titles,
you can definitely stream Windows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think, this, what's really interesting about this is when the hearings, the antitrust hearings and things like that were coming up, and they were saying, well, what, you know, developers have to use your app platform if they want to have apps, and how is that fair? And Apple over and over and over again said, make a web app.
Right.
They just shrugged their shoulders and like, that's not a problem. Make a web app. And finally, you know, I would rather be able to have that direct user experience with the app and really kind of get the most out of it. And hopefully someday there's a compromise will come so that Apple can get what they want and, you know, Google Stadia can get what they want. But for now, a web app. Thank you. Thank you for doing that so that I can play these games from my devices. I'm excited about it.
And this is the argument for these antitrust, at least hearings, if not actual lawsuits, because it sends a signal to Apple. Because Apple could say, no, you're not going to do a web app either. They could pull the plug on WebSM or the services that PWAs require. But they can't now because the government's looking at them.
Yeah.
And they're, okay, yeah, make a web app. I guess we better stand by that. we'll see if WebSM and these tools are fast enough. My suspicion is they are. And actually, Apple may secretly hope that it works well because on their M1 chip, people have said, well, you're not going to get gaming. You don't have GPUs. There's no discrete GPUs. Well, you don't need them because the GPUs are in the cloud running on Google or Microsoft's or NVIDIA's servers. And all you need is a M1-enabled browser. Oh, look, Chrome is available for M1.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. And then they also, didn't Apple just announce that they're lowering their take from apps that...
15%?
Yeah.
But...
So maybe they are sort of setting the groundwork for that. Just
yeah, it's 15% if you make less than $1 million.
Right.
In which a year.
That's, what, 70-80% of the store?
Yeah, it's a lot of small people, but it's not Google, Microsoft. It's not Fortnite.
Definitely not Fortnite. Yeah. We heard that cry.
So, but I guess you're right in the sense, Lindsay, that's Apple also responding to scrutiny
Absolutely.
From government. Okay. And for anybody who's making less than $1 million, that's great news. That's cutting in half Apple's take. So that's really good news. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. We got to take a little break. We're running out of time. I don't want to keep you people too long. You've got shows to watch, whatever else it is. Islands to maintain. Actually, that's the real truth is, you know, I had the KK Slider concert. Now I really want to start terraforming on my Animal Crossings island. This is a bad problem. I am out of control. Our show this week, all of our shows had so much fun. We thought it would be fun if we made a little short video for you to watch. Here's what happened this week on Twit.
Well, you know, this is, I think, year 18 of the holiday tradition of ugly Christmas sweaters.
Oh, man, is it? Are you wearing one right now?
I am. At the bottom of this sweater, there is a place for an actual fire.
What? Oh, that's so clever.
Previously on Twit, iOS Today.
We're going to talk about our new iPhones.
I guess it's big. I don't have particularly big hands. I love it. And it feels heavy, but that feels like quality, right?
Security Now.
Where do most malicious Android apps come from?
I'm going to guess the Play Store.
Oh, Leo. Yes. The bulk of Android apps are not coming from unauthorized third-party app sources and repositories, you know, as someone might think.
Mac Break Weekly.
Renee has all three of the new Macintosh computers. We will, of course, be talking about the M1 chip.
Oh, I benchmarked this. I did the stonks version of benchmarking, Leo, because I knew that's only the only thing anyone would be asking. So I did the Geekbenches, the Cinebenches, the GFX bench, anything that with the word bench in it. I think I did a park bench.
This Week in Google.
They're called fleets. What is the singular? Is there a fleet or are they just all fleets? Would you do a fleets?
Is the verb form to flit? I will flit the
I will
fleet.
Flit the fleet. The fleet I flit.
I fleeted.
I fleeted. It doesn't sound good at all.
And then in the past tense, when it's gone, I flat.
Twit. Bring your brain. We'll do the rest.
Thank you to the great Jim Cutler, who is our pro bono VO guy. We appreciate it, Jim. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. These guys I've known since practically they started. Don Pezet and Tim Broom were IT trainers in the traditional classroom setting. And they came to an NAB conference, National Association of Broadcasters conference. I was on a panel with a bunch of people who were streaming like we do at Twit. And they said, a little light bulb went off. They said, what if we did IT training like Twit does podcasts? And IT Pro TV was born. they have really grown a lot faster than we have. They now have 5 full-time studios in their Gainesville, Florida headquarters. Superb IT content for people who either want to get into IT, and so they need to take these exams to get the certifications to get those first jobs, or people who are already in IT who want to polish their skills, get a better job, make more money. It is literally the best online IT education platform in the world. And you can learn about any kind of IT, whether it's being a developer or help desk support or a network administrator or a business professional, sysadmin, and of course, security. And what's more, IT Pro TV makes it fun. These are real IT professionals teaching you. They love it. They're passionate about it, but they're also engaging. So you really, it's the kind of thing where it's easy to learn. You can watch it on your computer, on your Roku, on your Apple TV, on any device you have. Put it on the big screen, listen to it in the car, watch it on your computer. And I know people who leave it on all day and they're just constantly learning. And man, do they have the training, 5,800 hours of up-to-date IT training. That's why they're constantly working in their studios. They keep it up to date. This stuff changes fast, but they change even faster. 375 combined certifications. You're getting the best IT education around. They're the official video training partner for CompTIA. So if you're looking for those really fundamental certs that every IT professional needs to get started, A+, security plus, network plus, they've got more than 12 CompTIA courses, Microsoft IT training, Cisco training, Linux, Apple, security, cloud, whatever it is. Look at all this. This month is Cert Nexus month. All November at IT Pro TV, you can learn about getting certified as a CyberSec first responder, a cybersecure coder, or a certified Internet of Things practitioner. This is one thing I love about this IT field and IT Pro TV. Whatever your interest, there's a place, there's a niche for you. And man, talk about job security. These are positions that are never going away. Every company in the world needs strong IT support. You're there for them. What a great career awaits you. Check out their podcast, TechNATO. Don Puzzett does that, featuring industry guests, IT news recaps, everything you'd like to know. Just kind of, that's free and it's available to anybody just to kind of keep up on the field. But the training is there, and that's what you really need. Go to itpro.tv/twit and get that professional IT education the right way, the affordable way. If I'm going to make it more affordable, if you use the offer code TWIT30, you could take 30% off any consumer subscription for as long as you stay active. Years, if you want. That makes it a really good deal. The most affordable way, the best way to learn. IT training you'll actually want to watch. What about that, huh? itpro.tv/twit. Don't forget the offer code TWIT30 for that big 30% discount. IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey with some of my favorite people. itpro.tv/twit. Sad news if you're a fan of astronomy, if you're a fan of SETI, the big Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico. This was, I don't know, was one of the largest dishes out there. Two of the cables broke. It is 57 years old, and it is not salvageable. They're going to demolish it.
Wow.
The National Science Foundation said, boy, we would love to save it, but we're much more concerned about the lives of people. You know, people visit the observatory, but there are also many astronomers work there. The towers are 300 feet tall. If the remaining cables break, the whole thing, it's a 900-ton suspended platform, could crash down onto the dish. The towers could fall over. They don't know in which direction. So they're going to take it down. Sean Jones at the NSF said the decision's not an easy one to make, but the safety of people is our number one priority. So I thought I'd pass that along. You could see the damage that was caused just by the failure of the first cable.
That is pretty rough.
You might have seen
that. First seen it in a post-apocalyptic sci-fi.
Yeah, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Before you take it down, make a couple of movies. Contact was made there. GoldenEye, the James Bond movie. I think it started with Hurricane Maria, which caused a lot of damage. And then in August, another cable went. And so, sigh. Let's see. Anything else we want to mention? Marissa Meyer has found a new company. She kind of wish she was, you know, big shot at Google, mm-hmm. went to save Yahoo, didn't work out so good, sold off Yahoo. Now she's running Sunshine Labs, which is a contact management app for iOS.
I think she really is a product person. Mm-hmm. She just really wants to do something cool with software.
Yeah. And I got it.
The right gig for her because it was a content job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got it. It's reminds me a little bit of Plaxo, which is not a good thing to remind anybody of. But what you do is you import your contacts into it. I don't like it that there's a big ad for the product here. They should just start there. It does a few things. You see, some of my contacts are enhanced by Sunshine. I don't know what that means. And then people can, who are other Sunshine users. So my friend Rafe Needleman, he sent me a thing saying he was using Sunshine, saw me, said, could you update it? So I sent him my information, and then he sent me his. So he exchanged his info with me. So that's a little Plaxo-like, kind of that behind-the-scenes sharing. It's kind of cool. If I run into somebody, which I won't, but if I ever do, I can exchange info with them. So it lets me choose the info card. It's okay. You can show this. The info card I want to use. I have my personal and professional. Yeah. And then I can, but I can even select one thing at a time. So here's my birthday. I can send it to everybody. That's cool. I can make an intro inside it. So I could say, Lindsay, meet Lisa. Lisa, meet Lindsay, and send that off. So that's
sounds like a
cool.
little streamlined LinkedIn, and you're helping it create all sorts of data and social maps.
Well, that's the other thing that comes to mind, because they're getting all your contacts.
Well, they're also seeing who your relationships are. They can probably log who you're interacting with and how frequently, and they will probably be able to rank you based on how much data you input into the system and how many people you manage to bring in.
She's working with a longtime colleague, both at Google and at Yahoo, Enrique Munoz Torres, to create Sunshine. So, I mean, you know, good for her. You're right. That's a good way to say it. She's a product person. People like her and my friend Kevin Rose, that's what they love. They just want to do new and interesting products. So good for them, right?
Side note, Rafe Needleman used to be my boss.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. He used to be my ex-wife's roommate.
Back in the days, right?
Yeah. Actually, Rafe's been on Twit many times. It's just funny that he should pop up there. What's he doing? He got into some other business, the news, I thought. I should check. It says I can view
his... Yeah, he wants you to update. Yeah.
Oh, he's Evernote. That's right.
That's right.
He went to Evernote. I forgot about that. No, I love Rafe.
Evernote, yes. Yeah.
He was your boss at CNET? Or
he was my
that?
Boss at CNET.
That's hysterical. Mm-hmm. Small world.
It is a small world.
Do you want me to introduce him?
On Sunshine?
I
need to install it first, but
I
then
can
sure.
introduce you. Well, right now it's invitation only. I was very pleased this morning. I got the text message saying, you're in.
Well, then you have to invite me.
I will invite you. There you go. I will invite you. Why did I get this link? Oh, this is kind of depressing. So I don't know. Have you ever watched a drywall guy work?
Yes, it's amazing and hard.
It's amazing. They're so fast. They cut it, they mud it, they cut it, they tape it, they mud it, they paint it, and they work so fast, and now there's a robot. That apparently can do the same thing. It's canvas. Is gonna
believe it though.
You don't think they could do it?
I think that they could do it in like new construction where everything is absolutely plumb and square.
Yeah. In fact, that's the plan, is to do it only on the big 10,000 square foot facilities.
But in my like 19-teens built house, there's no way that robot could do it.
And say, Lindsay, you talk like somebody who has real estate in the Bay Area, because I've got a house built in 1904, and it's the same thing.
You got a horsehair lath and plaster on that house, right?
Some of it, yes. Some of the walls have been rearranged over the course of the last 100 and some years. So I believe our bathroom has drywall.
I want to see a classic John Henry versus the locomotive. I want to see a guy, a drywall guy who's really a pro against this robot. I have to say, this robot looks like it would lose.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's that efficient. It, look how big it is, for one thing. It's, that takes up like the space
look
of a couple of humans.
Look how slow it is, too. These guys
and
are...
it seems like it goes kind of slow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if people would buy this because it can be a business expense and therefore tax deductible compared to having to hire a crew. Yeah. I mean,
They have literally canvassed the company.
Like, who wants this, I guess, is the question.
Yeah. Well, I think the idea is a big industrial park where you have a lot of just flat, square rooms, tilt-ups, basically. The company that does it.
We need more of those.
Canvas.build has been, they've been in stealth for 3 years designing this thing. An artificial intelligence drywall mutter. Just what the world needs. I think on that dystopian note, we could probably wrap. I should have saved the booting
That's
final
entertainment.
Record for this. That's it. Thank you so much, Lindsay Turrentine. It's wonderful to see you. We don't get John, all three of you, we don't get John nearly enough. I'm really glad you could be here. Senior Vice President for Content and Audience at CNET. I wanted to show everybody the project you've been working on at CNET for the Holiday Gift Guide. This is going to be a little bit of a different year for buying stuff, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, it's been interesting. People have been starting earlier, I think, because we're all stuck at home and we're worried about money. And so people are just kind of looking for every single deal they can find.
I'm a Christmas
Eve
guy.
We're going to help you out with that.
I'm the husband and father that goes out on Christmas Eve and all I can find is one Target that's open late and, you know, and everything's wiped off the shelves. So everybody gets the electric swizzle stick or something. It's like the worst. It's the worst. I'm a terrible, and I'm already planning. I've already figured out. I've like got lists. Like I never did this in life.
What? Wow! Congratulations!
I know what I'm getting.
Yeah, check it out. We can help you with that.
Yeah. So you've got categories under $30, $50, $100, and $250. Is it all tech? Oh, wait a minute. Toy lovers.
It's not all tech.
The Baby Yoda plush.
There's some good stuff in there, and we have people who are keeping it really up to date, which is what I'm really proud of.
Is that
people working to make sure that if we're posting things like, oh, we found a good deal, we don't leave it up.
They need to rename this, though, because it wasn't this the thing they used on the Crew Dragon as their zero gravity indicator. So right, John?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. When they got into space and they were in zero gravity, the little baby Yoda floated around and they said, oh, it's safe. Safe to take off our seatbelts. So that's really they got to rename that sucker. The baby Yoda zero
also,
gravity.
I find
indicator.
Baby Yoda just conceptually manipulative. It's so cute that it feels manipulative.
Yeah.
That's a side note.
Yeah. And it isn't really Baby Yoda.
Right. It feels like the Ewoks. Like you have the Ewoks in.
Yeah. And what about those porgs, right?
Same.
Somebody we know has a porg just over her left shoulder.
Yeah. does it have like the little suckers so you can stick it on a window?
That's not manipulative at all. Look at the size of those eyes.
Oh my gosh, it peeps.
Now how much would you pay?
It peeps.
I also have this too. So I'm a sucker for that.
Oh, it's really small. I didn't think it was small.
These are different. The one I'm holding is different than the one that's on the...
That looks like a troll doll. So. If you had hair on it, it'd be a troll doll.
It's so cute. It's so cute.
It's like engineered for cuteness with the way the ears are
exactly
tilted.
The big eyes.
Yeah. So this Lindsay, what's going to be the toy of the year? Is it going to be Squeaky the balloon dog?
I actually, that's really cool, but I hate to say it, it's going to be game consoles.
Yeah,
if you can get one. If you can get them.
Oh my God! I was up at midnight, and then Walmart said they had some on Thursday, and I got in at 12 noon and they were gone already. And it's frustrating. I'm trying to get a PS5 for Michael for his 18th, but I don't think it's going to happen. I told you, Michael, maybe for your 19th.
Along with everything else, poor Michael.
I know. Well, maybe I can find something. You've got a category called teenage boys. Dickie Eisenhower's work jacket. No, I'm not going to give that to a...
It's a good recommendation.
He would See, yeah, maybe. See, really CNET knows something I don't know.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Why do they...
Dickies is now a streetwear brand.
Is this what Eisenhower wore? Why do they call it an Eisenhower?
It does look a little bit like a military field jacket. I guess. You could imagine him wearing it.
A Kodak projector? Oh, but it's not for slides. It's for TV. That's
it's for
cool.
TV, so when your kid goes and socially distances in somebody's backyard with their pod.
Oh, he would love this.
Mm-hmm. It's actually,
You're winning here. Winning, or how about the Baggu 16-inch puffy laptop sleeve?
Oh, I want that. That is cool.
It's like the sleeping bag you always wanted, but it's just for your laptop.
Oh,
I would just be jealous of my laptop.
I know.
Do they have maybe a snuggie for people that could do the same thing where you're just there with your little hand sticking out typing?
Well, if you put Velcro on the laptop Baggu, you could put, Velcro it to your Baggu. Yeah. I do need something for that M1 laptop. It deserves a special thing. Mm-hmm. All right. That's CNET.com. Is there
/holiday?
Just /holiday. That's easy. The holiday gift guide. We're shopping already. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's not just Black Friday. It's Black November now.
It is. Yeah. All of the major stores are posting their Black Friday deals early, and they're calling them Black Friday deals, probably because that's the most popular search term.
Yeah.
But I bought something for my mom today based on a Black Friday deal.
Oh, I want this. What is this? This is some weird, I want whatever that is. It looks like an office desk, but it's I don't know, but it's not.
It's an ergonomically, it's like the kind, it's like one of those kneeling chairs, but with a desk.
With a desk attached. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. That'll be good for my joints.
Good for your core.
I love this microphone, the Shure MV5. This is good. Nice job. CNET.
Thank you.
.com/holiday. Your holiday gift guide. Oh, I bought a bunch of these. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love these. Yeah. There it is. Save your back with the Edge desk system. Mm-hmm. It looks like it might take over like it's got a robot and it might just kind of.
You also need a lot of room for that. But
yeah.
Again, speaking from a Bay Area real estate.
But you could fold it up. So this is what you need for the kid, the poor kid who doesn't have a desk, is zooming and is sitting at the kitchen table and she needs a desk. We'll get her this, the Edge desk.
Ooh, that is pretty.
Yeah. See, we've just sold a lot of them.
Yeah.
thank you so much, Lisa Schmeiser, Windows IT Pro. I'm sorry, IT Pro Today. I always put the Windows in there.
We used to cover Windows pretty exclusively and then rebranded. So the confusion's understandable. Yeah,
I apologize. It's IT Pro Today. What you got going on, Lisa? Anything you want to share with the world?
I wish I did, but our end of the year package isn't coming out until December.
Oh, so, you'll just come back in December then. How about that?
If you have me, sure.
Of course we will. I know what Lori's working on. She just put out her iPhone 12 mini review. I love this picture because it makes you look huge and the iPhone looks so little. It's so little. Let me see it. Show us. Aww. Do you have it there? Oh, it's pretty. You got the blue one.
Yeah, I did. I love the blue. It's a great color. So, yeah.
But now, is battery life okay?
It's fine. You know, it is lower than what I'm used to with the Pro models. I get down to about 15 to 25% at the end of a day. So it's noticeable.
But you still got some left.
A little. Yeah. And here's the thing, though. It's so small that the idea of bringing a battery pack with me or getting a case that's got a battery, I don't have a problem with that because the phone is so small that I'm okay with doubling up. Right. So, and if I was going to go somewhere where I thought I was going to use a lot of battery, I would be bringing that anyway. Now I have a lighter, smaller phone and the battery pack. And I was going to bring the battery pack with the Pro model. Now I'm bringing a battery pack and my phone is tiny. So it works out.
It's very cute. iMore.com for that review. And of course, you'll be back Tuesday for MacBreak Weekly. I will not be here. I'm going to take a couple of days off.
What?
Yeah, I know. I'm taking the week off to make turkey or something.
With Andy.
Yeah, for a three-person Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
Before I realized we weren't going to be able to, I ordered an 8-pound ham and a 17-pound turkey.
Oh.
We're going to be
Leo,
well fed.
Please tell me that you're going to use your Traeger.
I am going to Traeger the turkey.
Yes.
That is our pellet grill that you talked me into. And I'm so grateful. No. I'm so grateful. And I'm trying to figure out if I can like cook it for 9 hours. Like if I could put it in at 3 a.m. or something. I don't know. I'll have to figure that out. But yeah, I got a nice fresh turkey from Diestel Farms and I cannot wait. I'm very excited. And then we also got that Ozeri pizza oven. Mm-hmm. Were we talking about that on Mac Break Weekly? I think we were.
I think so. Yeah.
So this thing uses pellets to have a stone wood-fired oven.
Yeah.
And so
they can have wood fire pizza.
Oof.
I want to come over to your backyard so
bad.
Yes,
we got so many cooking implements outdoors now. Mostly because my wife won't let me keep them inside, but that's okay.
But this, if there's ever a need for it, it's right now, right? Because our best way, our safest way to interact with
anywhere.
Other people is in their backyard. So.
Yeah. So I think
that's a good justification.
We were going to have Thanksgiving in the backyard. Then we realized, well, it's going to be freezing and it could even be raining. So we're going to make all that stuff in this drive around. We're going to have a caravan Thanksgiving and say, throw it as we go by. Here's your turkey. Hold on. Here's the stuffing. Thank you, Lori. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you, Lisa. You too. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
I hope you have a wonderful time. Are you doing a big one or a little one?
Oh, me? Yeah. My folks live with us, so there's the five of us.
Oh, so you got a pretty big pod.
You know, last year we hosted 35 people.
Oh.
So this feels really small by comparison.
I bet you're looking forward to it, right?
I am, because it's just going to be, one day we nailed down our menu. The turkey's already thawing out. We're really happy about that.
That's nice. And Lindsay, you've got a large pod too.
Well, the pod, for lots of different family reasons, is splitting up and going to their other pods
for
Thanksgiving. So, no, actually, my boyfriend and I are going to make duck cassoulet and take it to the beach.
Oh, my God.
Amazing.
Can I be in your pod?
Yeah.
I really am looking forward to
my God.
Thanksgiving.
Oh, that sounds great.
It's going to be awesome.
Oh, yes.
I bought a 2-pound bag of flageolet beans.
I just bought that same thing.
Suitable for making cassoulet. All I need is a duck, some sausages. Oh, I love cassoulet.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to have a
That's going to be happening.
Oh, I'm so
jealous. I hope it's good.
Oh, it will be great. Are you making it or is he?
We're doing it together. We both like to cook.
That's
so it's going to be
so
fun.
Romantic. Wow. Cassoulet on the beach. Nice. Thank you all for being here. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed our L-word version of Twit. Lisa, Leo, Lindsay, and Lori.
Fun.
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
really
it was.
Nice to see
you all. So great to see everybody.
Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, everybody. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Twit at 2:30 p.m. Pacific on a Sunday afternoon, 5:30 Eastern Time, 22:30 UTC. If you want to tune in, you can watch. There's live audio and video streams at twit.tv/live. It's kind of the unedited come-as-you-are version. If you're watching that, though, you should be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. They're all watching live, too. After the fact, on-demand versions of everything we do available at our website, twit.tv. It's a podcast, so you can download it and listen at your leisure. We encourage you to do that. If you are listening to a podcast, though, you want to get interactive, you can go to our forums, which are always available at www.twit.community, a great place to talk. We also have a YouTube channel for every show we do, including This Week in Tech. And the best thing to do probably is to go to your favorite podcast application and subscribe. That way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I'll be back next week for Twit. I'm just going to take a couple of days off in the midweek. But do have a great Thanksgiving if you're in a country that celebrates Thanksgiving. I think Australians are doing it today. And the Canadians, of course, they celebrate it in October. They're way ahead of us. But I'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.